Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, apparently this is one of those things that they call in the for-profit media. This is what they call a slow news day. I know this because I got an email before the program from our buddy David in South Carolina. Hey, Bob, here's the actual top headline from CNN. No mention of the assassin in Arkansas, the Arkansas terrorist, nothing, silence, crickets. What if his name was Muhammad? Even what if he was from Mexico? But nothing about good old Timothy Dale Johnson, except maybe his garden looked a little bad. Police can't find anything to tell them a motive. But now they think the crime was planned. Duh. No. As notes David, as of the time that he sent this email, a little before the program started, about 3:45 Eastern Time, the number one headline on CNN.com, Body Proves Bigfoot No Myth, Hunters Say. It's a myth. Yes? No. Lord, I love the Muppet movie. Body Proves Bigfoot No Myth, Hunters Say. North Georgia men say they found a den of Bigfoot creatures. They say they'll reveal details of one Bigfoot on Friday in California. The body of the furry half-man, half-ape is 7 feet 7 inches tall, they say. The men won't reveal Bigfoot's den location because they don't want the other ones disturbed.
Tell you what, you guys just head on out to the beer joint. I'll be there in a little bit. No, really. That's your for-profit media. There you go. Body proves Bigfoot, no myth, hunters say. Because that's all that's going on in the world. That's it. David also notes, after a little thought, I figured out the Bigfoot tribe it found in the North Georgia hills. They probably stayed there after Deliverance was filmed and continued to breed. I bet they got their stars and bars and their Confederate battle flags hanging in the trees, too. Yeah, maybe that, you know, David, I think you're onto something. Maybe that accounts for the white sheets and the hoods. But, okay. Pretty lame attempt at humor on my part. So, nothing going on in the world today. It beep, flat line. That's why CNN jumped at the chance to headline its coverage on the website with a lair of Bigfoots found. Bigfoots, big feet. We need some. Yeah. Well, it has changed. And apparently the announcement of the discovery of the lair of the Bigfoot in Georgia has prompted some change, because there's another headline: Georgia signs ceasefire agreement. Can't resist. Come on, it's Friday, guys. Cut me a little slack. No, this is it. Shot in the eye, reporter prays as bullets fly. CNN also offers up some trenchant and penetrating commentary and observation from Glenn Beck. Wonder who he wants shot this time. No, you know, it's just gone. You know, when Ted Turner invented, because Ted Turner did invent the 24-hour news cycle, he had a grand vision for something. He had a grand vision of providing needed information literally 24 hours a day at the punch of a button on a clicker to the whole wide blessed world. And like any good idea, the Repiglicans and the conservatives got hold of it and said, wait a minute, we can do something with this. We can work with this. We can turn this into a means whereby we can brainwash the entire American public, or as much as we can get to watch us, with shark attacks and missing white girls, and the next thing you know, they won't be able to tell their news from their entertainment. They won't be able to tell their information from their entertainment. And lo, verily, yea, and forsooth, a brand new word was born, and it's called infotainment. So that's where we are, this 6:08, at the midway point of the month of August, 2008. 6:08 Eastern Time, nothing going on. Just quiet, quiet, quiet. Tot's grandpa yells after death question. Lord, that's like something. That's like something from Waiting for Godot. Mystery dad confirmed as German man. Is that a Bigfoot carcass in the freezer? Breathing optional in underwater rugby. Size 14 model called too obese. He gave her an STD. She sues for $25 million. Like I said, you guys just head on to the beer joint. I'll be along shortly, as soon as I can get all this shut down. Because there's obviously nothing happening in the world. Nothing whatsoever. I mean, just crickets. Or maybe there is something happening in the world, and the for-profit media is just doing its usual monumental job ignoring it. Among other things, today was rather a red-letter day for the old 894. The old 894 Express is toddling down the tracks. Today, after a long, much awaited, I guess, birthing period, gestation, if you will, the old 894 campaign announced their positions on technology. Really? Yeah. My friends, I am in favor of this newfangled thing they are calling wheel. I believe it will complement our other new technology being called fire. Yeah, what are they saying? John McCain will... Bill Doberman. Old 894 will protect the creative industries from piracy. Yar! The entertainment industry is both a vital sector of the domestic economy and among the largest U.S. exporters. Oh, they're in the exporting U.S. business. I wonder how many boxes it takes to get a gross of U.S. across the... Never mind. Bad grammar. While... They're pig-lickings. Come on. While the Internet has provided tremendous opportunity for the creators of copyrighted works, including music and movies, to distribute their works around the world at low cost, it has also given rise to a global epidemic of piracy. Yar! Old 894 supports efforts to crack down on piracy. Yar! Both on the Internet and off. Yar. Kind of cute, though. There's a fellow by the name of Richard Komen over at ZDNet. And he sort of pointed out when this came out that while Old 894 wants to protect the creators of copyrighted works, he's been actively engaged, he and the Old 894 Express campaign, toddling down the tracks, with ripping off artists. No, really. Let's start with, where do we start with the people that John McCain has ripped off? Let's start with that pill-addled wife of his, Cindy McCain. Because Cindy rips off websites regularly. She has ripped off, she's ripped off Food Network, and she's ripped off Hershey. In the old 894 campaign's efforts to make her look folksy and domestic, you know, all Donna Reed-like, with the little shirt dress and the belt at the waist. And Ward, I think you were a little hard on the beaver last night. Yeah, she rips off recipes from the Internet. And then there's, let's see. There's this guy. You know, did stuff like this. And this. And this. Yeah, Jackson Brown. One of my favorites. Jackson Brown's not exactly in love with old 894 and his willingness to protect copyright. In fact, Jackson Brown has been reduced to filing suit against the old 894 Express. Because without asking anybody, No by your leave. No, hey, how about it? Pretty please. Nothing like that. Old 894 just picked up. Well, you heard a snippet of it a minute ago. Old 894 just picked this up and decided it was his. Yeah. An anthem about coming of age. Running on empty. A classic of its time and an enduring classic. Unlike old 894. Jackson Brown's right pissed off. In the Los Angeles Times, it uses quotes to say that he is incensed that old 894 has been using Running on Empty from 1977 in campaign commercials. And he has, in fact, filed a copyright infringement lawsuit against both old 894 himself and the Repiglican National Committee. Did so yesterday in the U.S. District Court, I guess for the Southern District of California in Los Angeles. Wants a permanent injunction prohibiting the use of what this guy refers to as the Forlorn Arena Anthem. I still like the song. Yeah, I'm 45. What am I going to do? Permanent injunction against old 894. However, the Los Angeles Times says Jackson Brown may have sued the wrong guy. Because the ad was actually put together by the Ohio Repiglican Party. That's not slowing down Lawrence Y. Iser, Brown's attorney. He says they've got the right guys. Quote, we have sued the Ohio Repiglican Party as well, and we've been informed and believe that McCain and his campaign were well aware of the ad. We are also informed and believe that the ad was broadcast on television in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The fact that it appears on the Internet means it also reaches an audience well beyond those states. Now, the McCain campaign, as Jackson Brown, his lawyer, noted, the old 894 campaign has raised this to the level of habit. Because until he made them stop, the old 894 campaign was ripping off John Mellencamp. He's also ripped off ABBA, and he's ripped off Frankie Valli. But this is commonplace. For those of you of a certain age, do you remember when Ronnie Raygun ripped off Bruce Springsteen? Yeah, I do. You remember when Ronnie Raygun ripped off this one? Here we go. I do. I remember this very well. He ripped off this tune. Yeah, Ronnie Raygun ripped off Born in the USA. But the funny thing is, in both of these instances, the ironic thing is the cluelessness that is displayed by the Repiglican Party. I mean, oh, hey, look there. There's a song called Born in the USA. Boy, it sure would make a great campaign for old Morning in America President Reagan, wouldn't it? And all the hepcat neato guys of the Repiglican Party, they said, pardon the keyboard noises here, yeah, that's what we want. You know, we want people to identify Ronald Reagan with being born in the U.S. of A. Uh-huh. Because, dang, that's patriotic, talking about being born in the U.S. of A. And the dumb little culturally tone-deaf, clueless window-lickers, mouth-breathers, didn't even have the first clue of what the song was about. I mean, just saying. Because it's not, I was born in the USA and it's the coolest place I've ever been and we're better than anybody and we'll kick your ass if you look at us cross-eyed because we're born in the USA. No, it ain't that. Thieving bastards. Listen to the lines from Born in the USA. Of course, they're, you know, if you're in a city that's got a classic rock radio station, they're probably seared inexorably into your brain. You can probably, it, you know, with after a couple of years of driving around with a classic rock station in your city, you've pretty much got an iPod in your head. You can hear songs. You can just call them up and hear them if you're like me. Born Down. Tonight's poetry reading will be from the oeuvre of Bruce Springsteen. Born down in a dead man's town, the first kick I took was when I hit the ground. You end up like a dog that's been beat too much till you spend half your life just covering up. Born in the USA, I was born in the USA. I was born in the USA. Born in the USA. Got in a little hometown jam, so they put a rifle in my hand, sent me off to a foreign land to go and kill the yellow man. Born in the USA. I was born in the USA. Come back home to the refinery. Hiring man said, son, if it was up to me. Went down to see my VA man. He said, son, don't you understand? I had a brother at Quezon fighting off the Viet Cong. They're still there. He's all gone. He had a woman he loved in Saigon. I got a picture of him in her arms. Memo to the Repig-Lickin' Party? That ain't a lyric that's endorsing you horses' asses. That's about what you've done to the country. And here, after we take a brief phone call, we'll take a look at the Jackson Browne lyrics that old late 94 wanted to rip off. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob. Ben here.
Hey, Ben. What's up, brother?
Well, you know, don't think that they are too clueless, because they understand something very, very, very well, and that is we will remember the initial impression of the use of the song. That little thing will get etched into people's memory. The ugly aftermath, the months and months in court and the subpoenas and the restraining orders and the declarations and the affidavits, all of that, it's not good news. You won't hear it. And that ad campaign has already run long enough now for it to have made its impression. They'll just rip off somebody else's music next time.
Sure, but make them pay damages.
Oh, yeah, no doubt they can pay damages, but they get away with it, and it's not that they're clueless, it's not that they don't know that they are committing a federal crime.
No, they know they're committing a crime. What I'm saying is that they're culturally clueless, Ben.
Oh, yes, that they are.
They're tone deaf.
What they're doing was very intentionally, they knew they'd get sued the moment they did that.
Ain't no such thing as bad publicity.
That's right.
Yeah, there is that, but there's an element of the society that you gotta think has heard the song and goes, wait a minute, you guys really don't get it, do you?
Yeah, it is very funny.
And so, I mean,
well, it kind of reminds me of when when the theme song for Windows 98 was Start Me Up.
Yeah.
Make a grown man cry.
You know, yeah, exactly. But, you know, at least Bill Gates paid for the rights to use it.
Yes, he sure did. Yes, he sure did.
You know,
he did really well.
Meanwhile, Bob Seger and Toby Keith out there hustling their album discography to Chevy and Ford for all they're worth. But you know, I did notice that Bob Seger's "Like a Rock" kind of disappeared from Chevrolet's advertising because it got to where it sounded a hell of a lot like Iraq. In other words, it, you know, crap just blows up.
Well, that's a Chevy for you.
Not a Chevy man, are you?
Oh, I'll have to tell you about my 66 Impala someday.
I want to hear that, Ben.
You take care of my
friend. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, yeah, and sick transit, you know, Tempest Fugit, all that kind of stuff. The Republicans know that. But Lord, you know, we've got to be tuned in culturally so that we can say things to people like, why is old 894 ripping off an anthem about being rebellious youth in the late 60s? Is that what he's trying to point out to us, that he hasn't known youth since the late 60s? Do we really need him in, you know, the Oval Office? Just saying. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, this subject just punches my buttons all sorts of ways. Yeah, the first thing I thought of was, I find it supremely ironic that the ultimate right-wing creation is one of the things that makes this highly illegal. RIA.
Oh, well, is that a right-wing creation?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
These record companies?
Well, sure, I mean... But the Recording Industry Association of America was not created by the right-wing or the Republican Party, now, was it?
No, but they are backers, big time.
Okay, well... Yeah, but there are a lot of artists who aren't right-wingers who don't want their stuff ripped off, too.
Yeah, but I understand that. But the artists, they pretty much, you know, it's a case of the only game in town. You either go indie and take your chances, or you sign up with RIA.
But, you know, the fun thing is a lot of artists are learning that they can do better. It's not take your chances. It's not taking your chances going indie anymore. Look at what John Prine does with Oh Boy Records. I know we've got a listener out there who can lay it out and explain very cogently why people like John Prine and Will Kimbrough and our beloved truckers are a lot better off moving their stuff independently, because once you've got that dedicated fan base, because terrestrial radio is about as useful to John Prine or the truckers or Will Kimbrough, just to name a few. Terrestrial radio is about as useful to them as a kickstand on a submarine.
Yep.
But because their music, their fantastic, marvelous, magnificent music, is not going to get played on Clear Channel's highly focused group, demographically selected, inspected, neglected, rejected, no, playlists, huh?
Otherwise known as their piece of crap playlist.
You know, would you play the third cut from April Wine's Number of the Beast? No.
Yeah.
Who's April Wine? They had an album called Number of the Beast. They had an album? We ain't got it. We got a playlist. It's electronic. It comes down the inner tubes from the boss programmer. Well, that's all we can play. I can play you a Britney Spears song if you'd like.
Oh, please. Scare me.
I know.
My other goodie is there's an article on TPM that McCain has a standard answer to everything anymore. And it's classic. And his campaign has even started to use it. He started catching a bunch of flack, from this, you know, this, values, thing that he and Obama are going to be participating in, they started catching a bunch of flack from them about him putting Cindy up for Miss Buffalo Chip.
Yeah.
So he says, but I was a POW.
Yeah, and that's what Hannity says too. Well, you know, he came home and he walked out on his crippled what? But he was beaten every day for 5 years.
Oh, didn't you just love that film when he just went bonkers, when Combs finally grew a spine for a few minutes and just demolished that argument?
Yeah, I did enjoy it. But you know what? They never backed away from it, Susan. But he was a POW for 5 years. He was a hero! And, you know, poor little Alan Cole sitting there. I know he was a hero. Yes, he's a war hero.
But he still cheated
around. But I guess I'm just a horse's ass because I'm still trying to figure out how bombing mud huts turns you into a war hero.
Yeah, that's true. There's one other goodie I want to bring up before I go. And, it is John McCain's, or John McCrazy's, I should say.
Oh, 894.
Yeah, is his response to the Corsi book. Now, you know his response to the hatchet job Corsi did on Kerry, which was he condemned it, which was fine. His response this time, and this is a quote,
okay.
You have to have a sense of humor.
What?
Honest to Pete, I put it up on Santap.
All right, that's it. I'll meet you at the beer joint. I'm shutting down. You've got to have a sense of humor?
Uh-huh. You know what my answer was, and I put that up on Santap, too. Was that Cindy's answer when you called her a cunt?
The word. Even I say C word. Oh.
Sometimes it's necessary, Bob. I did it for effect. I won't be doing it again.
Okay.
But sometimes it's necessary.
Okay.
You're crying in the beer.
I don't even have one and I find the word offensive.
Well, so do I.
It's
just...
Kind of shows you what a... No offense, but it kind of shows you what a piss Aunt Cindy is, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, I don't even... See, my brain is partitioned, so I'm not even, in my head, I can't even think about using that word around my beloved wife, because in my head, I get hit with an iron skillet. Just for thinking about it. Out, see?
Yeah.
But she took it. She took it. Just
would have that same reaction.
Well, I'm a Republican wife, and I must accept the correction of my husband.
Oh. Horse
pucky. No, what she did is, oh, am I John? Okay, well, yeah, I'm taking away the credit card for a month.
Yeah, that's what I would have done. I would have said, well, in that case, you just do without credit cards.
Live on your senatorial live on your senatorial salary.
Right. And do without the plane while you're at it.
Yeah, maybe you can borrow some money from your buddies in the Keating Five. How's that?
Yeah, that's just... Honest to God, that was his response. You have to have a sense of humor.
Well, which part of it is it that he wants us to find to be such a daggum knee slapper? Is it the part where Obama thinks abortion is as long as the? I mean, what is this? The pool hall rule? Have you read this business about the abortion that comes out of this Corsi the book itself is an abortion, but this business where as long as the toe of the baby is in the womb, Obama says you can kill the baby, which is just crap. But you know what?
He went even further in an interview. He said even after it was born, if the mother wanted.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's the thing. If the baby's born but the toe is still in the birth canal, you can whack the baby.
Yeah.
Which is just bull. It's just bull. But it shows you where the repiglicking mind goes, because you know what that is?
That's murder.
No. That's the old pool hall rule. You ever hang out in pool? Okay. If you ever hang out in any pool halls, there's a sort of a, I don't know, maybe it's written in a rule book somewhere, but there's an old agreement that for the purposes of shooting pool, one must have 1 foot on the floor at all times.
Oh, good God.
No, really. And then they turned it into a right, and then there's this right-wing misogynistic joke that I'm not going to tell.
I get the point.
Okay. Well, Your Honor, I had one foot on the floor. That's the punchline.
Right. I can extrapolate. Anyway, the exact quote, and it's very short, so I'm going to read it, is asked by a reporter today to comment on the book. McCain said, quote, "Got to keep your sense of humor," unquote, before his aide whisked him away.
Oh, you know, I wonder if they carry those little whisk brooms like Major League umpires who are doing the behind-the-plate duty for it. You know, come on, 894, got a whisk.
I won't fall off the chair.
Got to have a sense of humor. Yeah, that's I don't care who you are, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Susan, thanks a lot. I meet you at the beer joint.
Yeah, love to Agnes. Bring her with. I'll buy you both beer.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Hey, you got, my friends, you have to have a sense of humor. Jesus. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Why are we doing this again?
Doing which? What have I done now?
No, why are we the Democrats? Okay, not Democrats, but the Democrats. Why are we doing this again? Okay, we're falling for the same trick. Okay. Now, you want to play the what? Which card do you want to play next? Okay?
I don't...
Or the...
Well, I mean, they're playing the scary Negro card. They're playing the baby murdering card. I think they're playing all the cards at one time this time through, Bob.
Susan just talking about, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a card. They're playing the same damn cards they did back in... What was it, 1999, 2000, 2004, 2006, 2008? When are we going to wake up as people and realize they're playing us just like a deck of cards? They throw the same stuff out every campaign.
Well, okay, two questions, Bob.
Okay.
One... How do we define we, as in we're doing it again? Because it's obvious to me from this, from just the beginning of this conversation, that you're not falling for it again.
No.
I think it's fairly obvious that I'm not falling for it again. The Horn audience is not falling for it again.
Okay.
So who's doing? So Bob, and I'm not being a smartass, Bob. Who's doing this?
Who? Okay. Stop and go back to the what was it? What was the name of that old cowboy that came out of Texas? Huh? And he threw the rope around. He roped the rope, or he roped the dope, or he pulled the dope in with the rope. And he said, I don't belong to no organized party. I'm a Democrat.
Oh, Will Rogers. Sure.
Yeah, there you go. See? And he said, I don't belong to an organized party. And that's our problem, Bob, as Democrats. We are not organized. We are free thinkers, or we have a mind of our own, and occasionally we will get together and fight for something that is worthwhile. Okay, now stop for a moment and think back to Will Rogers' day. It's the same thing. We are faced with an organized party, and they are so very organized. The Republican Party, the Republicans, whatever we want to call them, they are very organized. They're like lemmings. They will follow each other over the cliff into the sea as long as it is McCain. And they will do everything to, just demoralize us as people. They will try to make us think that we are wrong for thinking for ourselves and not asking Bob Kincaid for an answer.
Oh, that works, though, because I am not the answer guy.
You're just like Mike Malloy. He doesn't have the answers either. He's a Democrat. He really is a liberal man. He really is. And so is Randy Rose, that she tells the truth. Most people don't want to hear the truth.
Well, yeah, that's like, you know... It's like Guy James. You know, this man is the very embodiment of being an FDR JFK style Democrat. And he enunciates those values ever so clearly, and they're the right values. But it's the constant uphill battle with one foot in a bucket.
Are they correct, Bob? I mean, we don't know. Who knows what the pick? Maybe we, like the dinosaurs, have met our match, and now it's time that we, just leave the planet. Or maybe we, as human beings, can find a resolution to our problem. What the hell are we doing in Georgia? Okay? Not Georgia, USA, but Georgia, USSR. Okay?
Former, yeah.
Okay. Question. Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we in Iraq? Why are we doing the things we're doing? Because what? George Bush says we should, okay? So we should listen to a squatting monkey in the White House like we have listened to him for the last 8 years, and Condoleezza Rice is some kind of a what?
Yeah, but wait a minute, Bob, because Condoleezza Rice, now she has gotten some of her very best shoes together, and she has gone over there to give them a stern talking to in Pigeon Russian.
Bob, please, your father and I are warriors. I mean, I would have loved to have met him. One man to another and sat down, had a cup of coffee with him. I'm sorry that he's gone. I'm sorry that I'm still here and he's gone. We sitting somewhere else looking down saying, oh, my God, I thought I taught these children better. Think outside of the box. I'm sure he told you that many, many times.
Now, mostly he said, get your head out of your ass, but it's probably the same thing.
This thing is, Bob, I don't know what the truth is anymore. We've been, 8 years of George W. Bush, and we have turned this world around absolutely 180 degrees. It wasn't 360, otherwise it would be going in the better direction. But we have turned this globe around. We have stopped that progressive thinking, to think of progress that Bill Clinton gave us. When he left office, we were in the black. We were ahead of the game. Now we are so far behind the curve, we don't even know where the curve is, Bob, on that bell curve, in whatever way you think about it. You've got to think outside of the box, and they got you in a box. They teach you to fight each other over what? Racial issues, sexual issues. They try to make out some other well darn thing. I was going to say a bad word. Some other thing that you can't even see where they're pointing you, and they're pointing you in that direction. I'm saying if we don't, as a unified nation, vote for Barack Obama, not because he's the best man, but because he's the better man, okay? Like FDR wasn't the best. But he was the better man back in his day. We have to vote for him en masse, all of us. If you don't like him because Hillary got her butt cleaned up in the primary, big deal. Vote for him anyway because he's got a D after his name. Kind of like, I don't belong to an organized party, Bob.
I'm a Democrat. Yeah.
And I argue with you in many, many things, okay, as many of our friends have done in the past. We argue because we can. At least we can do it intellectually, okay, with a mind, and we can put a sentence together and not go, blah, 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 something's going on over there in Russia, and my good buddy, Putin or whatever. I looked at his eyes. And
I saw his soul.
See? I saw his soul. And he looked just like me, because he's a squatting monkey in Russia. I'm a squatting monkey in the White House. I squat in every corner, and I put my piles there. And every now and then, and then I look under him and say, oh, is there a weapon of mass?
Easy, Bob, easy.
Well, that's what a Republican does.
I know.
No, and the truth, hey, tell Susan I love her.
Well, I think you just did.
Because it is that simple. You know, she's got her heart, and she's got lots of. But let's all vote for that black-white man. Oh, this is the wonderful thing I love about this. Okay, if you vote for Obama in the upcoming election, you'll be voting for a white man. No, you'll be voting for a black man. Or you'll be for a black-white man. Or you'll be voting for a man. At least he can put a sentence together that makes sense, Bob. And on more occasions than not, I have come on here and talked with you, and I can't put a sentence together that makes any sense. Not really.
I wouldn't say that, Bob.
I'm not really.
You make a hell of a lot more sense than any press conference the dear leader's ever given.
Well, then I'm that guy back there with the rope going around the thing saying, I don't want no doggone. Organized party. I'm a Democrat, like herding cats.
Well, and that is it, yeah. There's two metaphors: herding cats across a parking lot, and pushing a wheelbarrow full of frogs.
Yeah, well, same difference. The thing is, Bob.
Daggum frogs keep jumping out and wanting to go their own way.
Bob.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I care about you. I care about Head On Radio. I care about the Democrat Party. I got caught up in the Republican thing. Democrat. Okay. Put off that Democratic. Because we care about each other. We just don't show it until it gets in our craw. And it's time that it, like back in the day of FDR, when this country had been run to the ground by Republicans. This country had been destroyed by Republicans back then, and the Republicans right now are destroying this country. And it's time if we ain't organized, at least we can vote en masse. We can vote all together to put this country back on a better track. And I'll tell you what, Barack Obama, whether it is a word or a voice or a name, or a man, vote for him, okay? Because he is at least the embodiment of both the underclass and the upper class, because he's both black and white. And it's time we have a black president with a heart to give a little bit of, what is that? That God gives you, okay?
Yeah.
It is what? You ask Jesus, please forgive me. And maybe Barack Obama can bring us together as a nation. Please. Maybe he can bring us together as a people, not black or white, but as a people, and we can say, yes, I'm proud to be an American. Hey, we've got so many other colors in this country. I love Jesse Jackson's rendition. He says, we are the Rainbow Coalition. Okay? The Rainbow Coalition. We are all colors. When we come together,
right, and the people that think they're one color are all colors. That's the whole point of that. There ain't no white people, there ain't no black people, there ain't no red people. There's very few pure-blooded anything.
That's right, Bob.
Because all blood is red.
Mm.
You know, except for the Klingons and the Vulcans and stuff, and, you know, we haven't caught them yet.
Get out of that. Hey, you're not on Star Trek. Okay?
Oh, yeah, I am. Oh, yeah, I am. Because, I mean, I don't know. If they got any other color but red, that means that they really are alien monsters.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that George Bush or Condi's or, you know, Cheney just, you know, you go take a pint from Dick Cheney and he just, you know, you get a bag full of 10W-40.
Don't try to draw blood from Dick Cheney. He doesn't have any.
Right, it's 10W-40.
Hey, Bob.
20W-50 maybe.
Bob, if you and I went bird hunting tomorrow, okay, I guarantee you I will go out there sober, and so will you, or I won't let you hunt. You know?
Yeah, I take a dim view of mixing alcohol and firearms, but yeah. Who am I?
I won't allow it, Bob. That is not allowed. You cannot have a drink before you either get in a vehicle and drive down the road, nor can you have a beer before you pick up a shotgun rifle.
Yeah, because when you do drink a beer before you pick up your shotgun, you wind up shooting your buddy in the face. I mean, we know that now.
No, he had more than a beer. And the thing is...
Well, you know, a beer or 20.
No, I'm not talking about a beer or 20. I'm talking about a man that will take a gun or get in the car and drive down a road. We have laws that do not allow you, or when you get caught with a blood alcohol level above such and such, you are DUI, right? But there is no law that says you can take a shotgun out in the field and your blood alcohol is such and such. But in this house, you are not allowed. No, we do not accept that because, Bob, I'm a responsible human being. Before I'm a Democrat or a Republican, I'm responsible.
Yeah, you're a citizen of the planet.
No, I'm responsible for what I do, Bob, as they should be, but they do not take responsibility for anything they ever did. Just ask George Bush when he asked Brown. He told Brown, you're doing a heck of a job there, Brownie. And Brownie was just trying to go out there and show off his, what are feathers, like a Republican peacock, and show off his feathers while people were drowning in that. Oh, my God, I have photographs of people coming out of that stadium trying to get water for their babies, for their children. And they're not black or white. They're both. They're black and white. See? And now we have a chance, just one chance on this planet to change things and dump the Republicans forever. Get rid of McCain. Put that guy back in the back in the day, the Hanoi built, and they'll hang him up and beat the rid of the crap out of him and tell him, speak the truth. Don't talk your crap. Stop being a Republican. Stop trying to get yourself one of these trophy wives and going out there on a campaign trail and telling everybody how much of a commander-in-chief you are. You sound just like George Bush. You talk about your service to this country. You serve nothing. You know, what did he do? He got shot down for dropping bombs on people. Bob, I am not qualified to be the president of the United States because I have PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. It's in my record, okay? And I am not qualified. But this McCain, this John McCain, is not qualified because he has PTSD. Anybody that's been hung up on a hook and beaten and tortured as long as he was is not qualified to be the president of the United States of America. We need a man with a vision, with at least a little forethought before he goes off and drops bombs on people. George W. Bush did not have qualifications to be the president of the United States. But, Bob, the Supreme Court gave him the presidency back in 2000 and 2004. They gave it to him. He was not qualified, but they thought they knew better. Let the people speak. Take the vote. Expect them to vote overwhelmingly for Barack Obama. If they don't, they are not American.
That's what I keep saying, Bob. The 2004 election and the 2000, 2004, and 2008, for that matter, these aren't elections anymore. These are, one, these are referendums on our future. But at a much deeper level, Bob, these are national IQ tests. And because knowing where the country is and knowing that we're not going to just spontaneously get well, Bob, if for some reason, known but to Satan, we elect John McCain, 0894, the McCain-Jurian candidate, if we elect him, not me, not you, but if the American people choose him for the White House, then we've pretty much indicated that we're not sharp enough to call ourselves a free people anymore.
There you go. That's true.
Good talking to you, Bob, and have yourself a great weekend, all right, brother?
You too. And
one of these days we are going to do some bird hunting.
I hope so, if we live that long.
If there's any birds left.
Hey, love to Agnes the kid.
All right, you take care, and hey to Glenda.
Down the duck.
Yeah. We'll right. Talk to you soon, Bob.
Love you much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, had another caller that lost. Doggone it. You guys got to have a little patience, okay? Well, there goes an hour. These things are roaring by these days, and it just blows my mind. And in consideration of just how clueless right-wingers are. Yeah, let's do Bump Out with that song. Let's do. Because if you bother to, you know how I am about lyrics. If you bother to listen to the lyrics, you'll find that there's a lot more meaning there than meets the eye. And it's kind of hard not to notice that with something like Jackson Browne's Running on Empty. If you don't own it, you probably should. Look at this. Who does this not apply to that has enough brain in their head to examine their own lives as they go? And you know, that pretty much lets out all repiglickins. They don't do introspection. They don't, you know, Plato said the unexamined life is not worth living. And where repiglickins are concerned, you know, if the shoe fits. Looking out at the road rushing under my wheels, looking back at the years gone by like so many summer fields. 65, I was 17 and running up 101, and I don't know where I'm running now. I'm just running on. I mean, dear God, listen. What in this song would make you want to use this for your campaign if you're a repiglickin? He wants to turn this into something. I don't get it. He wants to turn this into something about drilling? Oh, God, my little pumpkin head's just... little pumpkin head's just hurting. This is America's liberal voice. America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be back for Hour 2.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Two past the hours, this Friday evening edition of Head On continues, rolls on, runs on empty, darn near. Just so you'll know, I ran the tallies, and it's the midway mark of August, so it is fitting that at this point in time I should let you know that we stand just short of $700 for keeping the lights on the horn. Just here we are. And it's tough. Yeah, well, you know, okay, that's only $300 away from halfway to the monthly goal, Bob. No, what that is, that's $690 that takes us up to April, basically. Yeah, because we're constantly filling a previous hole from the hole that we're in for the that you get know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, better than I can say by a long shot. So that's where we are. In the course of the conversation I was having with Bob, I saw the email roll in. We saw a kind contribution come in. I don't know whether I never know whether you use names or not. You drop me. You know, if you contribute to the horn, like you use PayPal, there's a place you can put a message. Tell me if it's okay to at least use your first name so I can thank you personally on the air. Because I'm real funny about people's privacy. We never asked for a last name, when we put you on the air. I'm just real funky about people's privacy, and I will not for the life of me violate it. But I love the message I got with this last one. It said, just a very short message. It said the truth is always lonely. And I think that's a variation on Mark Twain, because he said, be good and you'll be lonely and you'll be free, something like that. But yeah, so thank you very, very kindly. That puts us at $700 for this month. And we do sincerely appreciate it. But back to the theme that we were working. This sort of confluence of pop culture and old 894. You know, one of the folks that helps make the horn go is our buddy ELO. She's a moderator in the chat room, and she puts together some brilliant videos. And I opened the show, and I didn't tell her what I was going to open the show with. This show is largely improvised because I love improv. I don't like doing scripted stuff because if something happens that takes you off script, then you're out there floundering around and wondering what the hell's going to happen next. You know, is this the part where the piano falls? You don't know. So I love improv. And that's what makes it difficult for me to, you know, put up a blog post or something that says, you know, tonight on Head On we'll talk about, because I never know what you're going to want to talk about, let alone what I've got on my mind. Because this is literally, you know, free-form stream of consciousness. Because this is how we find out a little bit about what matters, is, you know, what comes bubbling to the surface. So ELO didn't know what I was going to talk about, but, you know, after a while, I guess we sort of all get on the same wavelength in a way. Then I got this email from her saying, Bob, oh my God, how funny you're talking about this tonight, talking about the copyright stuff and everything. I just got done sending a rebuttal to my local Republican rag on the same thing. The letter that appeared in today's paper is below this, and my response is after. The local paper, you can read as much of this on the air as you want. So here's what showed up in the local right-wing rag. Under the headline, Democratic Party has its appeal. And some little wingnut, and if you're on hold, please stay that way, and I'll be to the phones in a second. The little wingnut writes, contrary to a lot of readers who think I am an addled Republican, I'm announcing my plans for voting a straight Democrat ticket in the upcoming presidential election in November.
I'm voting Democrat because I believe the government will do a better job of spending the money I earn than I ever could. I'm voting Democrat because freedom of speech is fine as long as nobody is offended by it.
Okay, see, I got to throw a little flag, little red flag out on the window. Oh, that, we gotta have a review up in the box on that one. I'm voting Democrat because freedom of speech is fine as long as nobody is offended by it.
Now, see, little wingnut, the problem we have is not with being offended by your speech, it's the fact that your speech is getting us killed! People are dying from your right-wing hate speech. But I'll move on.
I'm voting Democrat because when we pull out of Iraq, I trust that the bad guys will stop what they're doing because they now think we're good people. I'm voting Democrat because I believe people who can't tell us if it will rain on Friday can tell us the polar ice caps will melt away in 10 years if I don't start driving a Prius. I'm voting Democrat because I'm not that concerned about the slaughter of millions of babies so long as we keep all death row inmates alive.
Jesus. I got another one of these. I got another installment of Wingnut email later tonight, by the way.
I'm voting Democrat because I believe that people in business should not be allowed to make profits for themselves. They need to just break even and give the rest away to the government for redistribution as Democrats see fit. I'm voting Democrat because I believe 3 or 4 pointy-headed elitist liberals need to rewrite the Constitution every few days to suit some fringe kooks who would never get their agendas past the voters. I'm voting Democrat because I believe that when the terrorists don't have to hide from us over there anymore, and when they come over here to America, I don't want to have any guns in the house to fight them.
Good for nothing, Republican. Chicken chick. You'd no sooner fight an invader that... No, all the Republicans will be going, "See you later! I'm going to get my prayer rug!" And leave the liberals out there going, "Okay, well, we'll take to the hill." Wolverines!
I'm voting Democrat because I love the fact that I can now marry whatever I want. I've decided to marry my horse.
I guess that means you'll be a horse's ass.
I'm voting Democrat because I believe oil companies' profits of 4% on a gallon of gas are obscene, but the government taxing the same gallon of gas 15% isn't.
Oh, it just goes on and on and on. Bless her heart, ELO could, and I, you know, we've talked, and I know, I can just see her sitting here, you know, beginning to vibrate a little bit. She fires back, and this is just beautiful. Plagiarism is a Republican value. I had to chuckle while reading Bob Nicholson's public forum letter that appeared in the 8/15/08 Times Gazette. I wasn't chuckling because it was witty or original, but because it was largely someone else's work passed off as his own. A simple Google search yields hundreds of thousands of matches verbatim for paragraph after paragraph of Mr. Nicholson's letter that were posted months before it ever appeared in the TG. Copying and pasting, then signing your name to another's writing does not lend itself to the healthy community discourse this public forum encourages. I recall seeing another public forum letter some time ago about Islamic terrorists that was copied verbatim from a column by Doug Patton and ended with "Jimmy Crack Corn and you guessed it, I don't care." Well, I'll be damned, that's the one I read last night on the air. Nice to see that first grade rhetoric is alive and well within the Republicans' vocabulary. If I had the time, I'd search the TG archives to find out who submitted that brilliant piece of plagiarism. But this seems to be an increasingly common practice among Republicans. Cindy McCain was busted for stealing recipes from the Food Network's website and trying to pass them off as her own or her husband's website. The McCains, of course, blamed it all on an intern and took the page down. John McCain and the Ohio and Republican National Committees have been named in a lawsuit for using Jackson Brown's copyrighted work without permission. It seems the Republicans forgot to do even the most basic homework before deciding to use a song from one of those pointy-headed elitist fringe kook liberals, as you so fondly referenced, in a commercial. In fact, Mr. McCain has been asked to stop using many songs because he failed to get permission. I don't know why he hasn't jumped all over Mike Meehan's The Republican song to use in his campaign. That's the one where in the chorus, apparently, the only thing he could get to rhyme with no is no. And, you know, that guy's right up there with Kid Rock. Kid Rock rhymes thing with thing. Because he repeats it about 30 times. Dang, that's just catchy, but I digress. Even Mr. Nicholson's comments about ignorance and stupidity are a direct quote from an article written by J.B. Williams. I understand that some people honestly believe that imitation is the highest form of flattery, but aren't these public forum letters supposed to be our own thoughts and not someone else's? I mean, come on. If I wanted to know what the latest Republican talking point mass email contains, I could look on the Internet and skip the Times Gazette entirely. That's going to hurt. That's the one that hurts. Is this what the Republican Party has been reduced to? Unable to compile and express their own thoughts, ideas, and opinions in something as simple as a public forum section in a local newspaper, they willingly let someone else do it for them? Perhaps the interpretation of at least some of Mr. Nicholson's letters should read, I'm voting Republican because freedom of speech is fine as long as someone spoon-feeds me what I'm supposed to say. And a girl yellow. Dang. Right at the... That's the full broadside. Right, oh, right into the masts. Gotta love it. But that's how they are. You know, remember, if it's moving, they screw it. If it ain't moving, they steal it. That's the Republican Party platform. In a nutshell. I mean, and preferably, if it's too heavy for them to steal personally, they'll pay substandard wages for somebody to pick it up and haul it away, and then tell them they need to haul themselves up by their own bootstraps, and the person, that's right, America is a land of freedom. Oh, let's go to the phones. Enough of me. How about you guys? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston, what's up?
Oh, just enjoying a rainy day here in Denver.
Oh, that Fundy praying for rain got a little early, did he?
yeah, that's right. It's either him or me. I was praying for it myself, and it's been a blessing. It's really cooled things down here. I think the high today didn't reach 70, and maybe a little bit more tomorrow. And we've been in a drought, so it's nice in that way as well. So
get a little bit of relief.
Yeah. I love the sound of it too. Just the sound of the rain and the thunder and all that good stuff.
Now, rain on a tin roof is like a lullaby.
Yeah. But how are things in West Virginia weather-wise?
You know, we had a big old thunderstorm roll through here earlier. We've had a nice, a decent amount of rain here where I am over the course of the summer. People's gardens are looking nice. My neighbor's corn is as high as an elephant's eye. We'll have to get an elephant here to check, but it's been a very nice, nothing particularly blistering.
Mm-hmm.
My son is taking his first run at playing football, and I remember my first effort at it. Yeah, story time. Down south, growing up, when football starts, you have what are called two-a-days. And I guess they happen all over the country, but they don't do it in middle school yet. But, you know, you show up and you practice for 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon. And after that, you know, that second session in the afternoon is a real killer.
I bet.
Because down there, by then, the humidity's up at 112%, and, you know, even the flies look tired.
Wow. I never did anything like that when I was playing soccer. I hope he's enjoying it.
But, well, that's the nice thing. It hasn't been debilitatingly hot. He's gotten through his first week of walkthroughs in shorts and helmets, and the pads go on Monday. And bless his heart, he's itching to start hitting people. I think the bug's biting. And by that, I mean that in a good way.
Yeah. What position does he play?
We don't know yet, but he's got a little bit of height for his age, so he's not particularly girthy. So I've noticed in practice that they've had him in a linebacker slot a couple of times, and they've let him, you know, they're just trying to find out because it's his first year ever. They stuck the ball in his hands and let him run, and he dragged a couple of kids about three kids about, you know, 10 yards today. So that was inspiring.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love playing football, too. I never played in a league, formal league. My mom won't let me. But I did play informally, you know, in the playground, and I loved it.
Oh, I did, too. I was there's a very social pecking order in the Deep South when it comes to football, and I wasn't sufficiently somebody's son. So that didn't contribute to, and I was a pretty rotten football player too. But so I didn't start, but I was a blocking dummy and I got to scrimmage and stuff, and I just loved it. I did.
Good, good. Well, on another note, what's this copyright issue that you've brought up?
Well, John McCain has developed, and you know, copyright's a funny, it's a tough topic because I go back and forth. But when you're a political candidate for the presidency of the United States, it would seem that basic decorum would suggest that you at least contact either the rights holder or the artist himself to get permission to use a song in your campaign ads. Old 894 has been busted now. He's been sued by Jackson Brown for using Running on Empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. And I do have mixed feelings about copyright myself. I used to do a cable access TV show where I'd broadcast the lectures of people like Angela Davis and Ralph Nader, Howard Zinn. And I'd like to use intro music and outro music. And I borrowed stuff without permission, for sure. I did call a couple of times, but it was kind of complex, and it was kind of a pain in the butt, to be honest with you. So,
and bless you for your honesty, because it is.
Okay. And maybe I was wrong for doing it, but I just...
Well, it seems to me that we should be able to clearly delineate what constitutes commercial use versus non-commercial use,
yeah,
versus fair use. For instance, the way it's been, the way internet radio is being handled, you can't define that, Preston, as anything but an attempt to keep this medium down. Because the recording industry, and I know this is a tough topic for a lot of people, but the recording industry is out there. Well, you got to remember, when VCRs first came out, the Motion Picture Association of America sued. Didn't want anybody to have VCRs because it was going to keep people from going to the movies.
Interesting.
And there were suits over digital audio tape back in the day, and every time they and that's why I call them buggy whippers, because they keep you're going to destroy our buggy whip industry,
right?
Yeah, well, dang it, come on into the future with us, because yeah, there's a lot of potential to make a lot of money out here.
Yep, but yeah, there should be some space though for other sorts of you know, we can develop, you know, commerce and the VHS and the DVDs and all that stuff, but there's another concept called the Creative Commons versus the copyright. The Creative Commons is kind of, it allows for, you know, reasonable sampling and borrowing, taking, and sharing completely.
And, you know, I was there was a great example of that. We may have talked about it, Preston. I'm a fan of an author named Jonathan Lethem, L-E-T-H-E-M. Just writes some marvelous mind-bending stuff. Gun with Occasional Music. Can't come up with all of them right off the bat. Motherless Brooklyn, just brilliant. But on his website, he's got this open source thing where he has written short stories. And he has just put his short stories up on his website, and he invites artists to use his short stories as jumping off places for creative purposes. He invites filmmakers to make screenplays and make movies from his work. And he said, you know, the only deal here is that you don't have any exclusivity and somebody else may be working on the same thing.
Yeah. Great. Great. Yeah, I know some DVD producers. I found this documentary about Mexico in this, you know, the popular uprising in Oaxaca. And that DVD was, you know, encouraged people to make copies. And then there are instances where, I know for the directors of Occupation 101, they had heard that some people just would not have had access to it if not for pirated copies. They don't have the money, or there's no marketing budget, so people don't know about it. And they were happy to hear of the informal network of distribution going on of their film. I don't know, Occupation 101 is an incredibly powerful film. So what I've been thinking though is that there's still that warning though, oftentimes. I don't know if about that film, but so many others. And people largely ignore it, but I wonder if it doesn't have an effect, though, to see this FBI or Interpol warning with a threat of a potential of, you know, $250,000 fine. You know, I think that stops a lot of people from making copies. And in a sense, it stops the kind of grassroots network.
You know, that's so funny you should mention that. I don't mean funny like ha-ha, but irony funny.
Yeah.
That you would mention that, Preston, because it's been a running gag that I started years ago, back when videos first came out on the market. And now my kids do it. We put a video in to watch movies, and the FBI warning comes up on the screen, and we all jump and go, whew! Maybe it's too visual to be funny on the radio, but we do that. And it used to just irritate the life out of people, some people that I knew. And, whew! Yeah, because, oh, I'm scared.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
The FBI is watching the movie with us.
Yeah, and typically it's not an issue, but, you know, I wonder sometimes, I don't know. But on top of that, you know, and I think some, you know, I wonder if there are people who just how many arrests there are made. I mean, there are these underground commercial markets, people selling them. I don't know. It's an issue I'd like to look more into, but speaking of FBI warnings, this Messiah talk, we brought this up last week, you know, Obama being kind of jacketed with this Messiah label. And just noticing that that's exactly the term that was used in the FBI memorandum towards Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And, yeah, I don't think it's coincidence that they're parroting their language. I think they are in many ways, if not the FBI themselves associated with them. I saw a program on PBS regarding Jimmy Carter's administration with Gwen Ifill, and they mentioned that there were former FBI agents who were part of the campaign to destroy him. And they continue to this day. Hannity and all of them, they cannot say a kind word about the guy. You know, same as Ted Kennedy. I mean, just up until recently, Hannity...
Well, but look at the patterns here. Look at the patterns, Preston.
Okay.
Jimmy Carter gets mentioned in, Jimmy Carter. And he's painted as, you know, this ultra-liberal who destroyed the American economy, okay? Ted Kennedy, instant reference to Chappaquiddick. Just the other night, in the course of calling out, did you see the Hannity-Combs exchange where that Susan mentioned earlier, where Combs found his spine and said, well, because they were having they were doing the John Edwards pile on. And the irony was just... the irony god was practically the dancing like Tinkerbell around the studio, because there's Sean Hannity with his perfect hair pointing to his hair and touching up his hair, talking about John Edwards' $1,000 haircut.
Right.
It's up to $1,000 now. I think it was. Didn't it start out a $400 haircut?
Yeah.
Well, Hannity's got it at $1,000 now, and he's touching his perfectly coiffed hair.
Right.
Okay, so that wasn't lost on me. And then you get,
he's not qualified since he cheated on his wife, and he cheats on his wife. Why should I trust him line?
Well, yeah, all of that. So it's all John Edwards, bad human being. Oh, he cheated on his wife. And finally, Combs just looked up and said, okay, you know, I agree. I absolutely agree. This does touch on one's competence to be be the president. But what about John McCain?
Exactly.
And little bats started flying out of all the wingers' mouths.
Yeah,
and at one point because that was 30 years ago, and Hannity's screaming, Preston, but he was tortured and beaten in prison for 5 years. Never mind the fact that the people that were in prison with him said that after Ho Chi Minh died, the torturing pretty much stopped.
Combs does that more often than people recognize, I think. He catches a lot of people like that, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for it.
But the best part came, Preston, after he had said, then they started, well, that was 30 years ago. That was 30 years ago. Blah, 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 blah. 30 years ago. And then the little winger pops up and says, well, Robert Byrd was in the Klan 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there are themes that they work, whether it's Jimmy Carter or Robert Byrd or Ted Kennedy, or because anytime Ted Kennedy's mentioned, there will be some reference to swimming or a car wreck, or the Kopechne, or Chappaquiddick, because they want that to be the and this is the important part, they want that to be the definition, Preston, of what the man's life has been about.
Yep.
When his life has been, when Ted Kennedy's life has been about ever so much more and ever so much more good. And the same applies to Jimmy Carter. They can't have an honest conversation about Jimmy Carter, because if you have an honest conversation about Jimmy Carter, Jimmy Carter comes out about 900,000 million trillion percent better than Ronnie Reagan or Gerald Ford or Richard Nixon.
Yep.
Because Jimmy Carter, in the 4 years that he was in office, took a wrecked economy and started correcting it. You know, they want to say, well, you know, Bill Clinton was just the recipient of the Reagan and Bush revolutions. That was the economy getting well, and it would have got well under, you know what I mean, you know what I'm talking about? Well, if that stuff applies, then clearly Ronald Reagan was the beneficiary of the Jimmy Carter efforts.
Right.
Because, see, I do remember Gerald Ford holding a press conference and giving out red buttons with the letters W-I-N on them. I won't forget them. But get a Republican like Hannity to mention that they were going to... Yeah, they had a button. That was how they... And it was W-I-N, whip inflation now. Oh, Lordy, I remember that.
Okay.
Because the economy was going in the tank under Ford, the economy was going in the tank under Nixon. You can't get any of these Republicans to mention the fact that it was Nixon who had to bring in price freezes. How's Nixon's doing?
Mm-hmm.
Not some, you know, commie pinko liberal the Democratic Congress. That was an administrative order by Richard Nixon.
Yeah, and they also brought in, you know, OSHA, EPA. And all sorts of stuff that would be fought tooth and nail these days.
Yeah, and so they can, but they can't. But the point here is they cannot have an honest conversation, Preston.
Right, and I didn't want to give Nixon administration too much credit. I mean,
no, but he did create the EPA, and OSHA did come in.
I think it was largely the result of popular pressures. Again, you know what's being communicated around progressive circles. How are they advocating and legislating themselves, you know, what kinds of relations they have with different politicians and, you know, what kind of pressures they're bringing to bear. And real quickly on that point, I think sometimes we're underutilizing, you know, some of our avenues where we could be mobilizing people. And instead, I'm seeing themes of mockery of Hillary Clinton and mockery of Clinton supporters. They are being framed a certain way as being ridiculous, unreasonable. There's a clip of particular Hillary supporters who want to see a McCain-Clinton ticket. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's not typical, though. You want to speak to a more traditional Clinton supporter, you speak with someone like the president of Emily's List or Ann Richardson's daughter. I don't remember their names, but they could give simultaneously a critique of the critique of Clinton's. And they could also talk about some of the positive things that she's done.
I understand all of what you're saying there, Preston, and I largely agree with you. But there is a lot of venom that is also flowing out of that group that I find to be extremely deleterious and extremely damaging. And not, I mean, look.
A lot of it's being created, though. A lot of that venom's being created.
But it's also being passed along. I mean, I would never. And I'm going to get in trouble for this because I like her. She's a friend. She was a friend of the program. But we had to just more or less sort of end things. You know, I used to have Carolyn Kay on Friday evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her wit. I love how sharp she is. But, you know, and I still get her digest every day from MakeThemAccountable.com. But every day it is this seemingly endless string of snidery against Barack Obama. You know, Jerome Corsi doesn't need any help.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And that's not, and bear in mind, that's not me saying that Caro is creating the snidery. She's passing it along.
Yeah.
All right? From all these websites, and I'm not going to bother mentioning them. People don't need to necessarily, I mean, yeah, they can go, they can figure it out for themselves.
Yeah.
But and then bless her heart, Caro adds her commentary, and I mean she despises Barack Obama. I mean she hates Barack Obama the way right wingers hate Clintons.
Well, Well, just as a question, and this isn't an argument or something I'm declaring as fact, but I think there may be an element of transference, that is, if a person's feeling snidery and insult and da-da-da-da, they'll often turn around and project it out on someone else. And I don't know. You think that might be going on?
Well, it's
because again,
it's a response to perceived slights.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think it's a healthy response. I think it's inaccurate. You know, it should.
I saw this graphic today of Puma people. Okay, you know, Party Unity, my ass, Puma. It was a graphic that showed these Puma people outside the Pepsi Center, and you know, with bandoliers across their chest, and you know, they're going to upset the convention. Blah 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 blah.
Now, again, Puma people, who are they? Why are they getting attention and not?
No, I shouldn't even be talking about them, Preston.
No, we should, because it's dividing us. Now, why aren't other factions of the Clinton supporters being highlighted? And who are being?
Because they are self-defining as the legitimate defense of Hillary crowd.
And who's partaking? Is it self-defining, or is the media, who I think again is working in concert?
The media have, but a lot of these blogs are self-promoting.
And they're going to get assist from people who want to divide us.
Sure.
Basically what provocateurs do. They have to have the Democrats divided. How are they going to do that? That's what we should always be watching for. Puma, okay, even if they are legitimate, you know, I mean, I think they might be legitimate, but there are other segments of the Clinton supporter community that would give us a completely different view of Clinton supporters. Again, I mentioned the president of Emily's List, a person who has been a powerful force in progressive efforts for years. She and her members are going to have a huge impact on local votes, getting feminists elected across the country. Now, there's a Hillary Clinton we could support, a supporter of hers that we could support, and a supporter of hers who supports Barack Obama. Those are the people we should be supporting and talking about. And
absolutely.
Instead of looking at Puma, oh, division, division. Hannity is always pushing this. He is always pushing this, that the Democratic Party is falling apart. It's like World War III. They're so divided. He is defining us. He is defining us.
Okay. Let me just add a couple of things to this because, I'm not.
And Randy Rhodes is doing this as well, I might add. We could get into that.
I'm at pains on this because I'm looking at the graphic right now. Okay. The graphic that I just mentioned. In the background, it's a tawdry little Photoshop job. It's a picture of the Pepsi Center with a big cougar sitting on top of it and a sign that says 08DNCC. In the foreground of the photo, you remember, what was her name? Lucy Lawless, what was it? Sheena, Woman of the Jungle, or what? TV show a while back.
Xena?
Yeah, Xena, yeah. Well, it's a picture of Xena with a snarling cat superimposed onto the face. And then next to her is a picture. It's Rambo's body with a Playtex 18-hour bra on it and Che Guevara's head. Okay.
Okay.
And so we've got guns and warfare images here, and there's a legion of
which makes me all the more suspicious.
Right.
Of it.
There's a legion of women in crop tops with lots of cleavage and cat heads behind it. And
yeah.
It makes me suspicious, too, Preston, and it scares me because it seems like there are some people who are just psyched for the idea making the Democratic National Convention a nightmare for reasons of ego or agent provocateur or any number of things. But meanwhile, if I may, just to throw a couple of things out there into the collective consciousness for consideration.
Okay.
I've got a website here, a news story that I find absolutely just maddening. This is from the Colorado Independent. You may be familiar with this.
Is that like a weekly newspaper?
It says a Center for Independent Media site.
I think I know. It sounds vaguely familiar, but I want to say it's like a weekly newspaper, maybe like in Fort Collins or Colorado Springs, so I'm not completely familiar with it.
Well, here's the headline.
For one. Okay.
Barbed wire, stun gun use, mark DNC warehouse jail. Have you heard about this yet?
Yeah, see, there's a lot of that stuff going on, too. A lot of this very intimidating kind of talk and caricatures of the protesters being made that you were all going to be running around with urine bombs and, you know, poop shooters and all this outrageous stuff.
What is the purpose? And I'm not trying to be an ass here, okay? I mean, you know how I am, Preston. What is the purpose of an organization that calls itself Recreate 68?
That's good you ask. And, you know, the best thing to do...
Because I was five in 1968, but I've seen the footage. Doesn't look like a pleasant affair.
Yeah, not something I'd want to partake in. But, in fairness to that organization, one of their organizers, Glenn Spagnuolo, very interesting man, and he's been doing a lot of good work for a very long time. And he talks about what the point was, and they have a website, I think it's recreate68.org, where they go into why they named it that, and they're talking about, they did not say recreate the 68 convention or recreate a riot. They're talking about the year 1968 and how important it was and devastating it was also, but still there was a spirit of resistance and belief that we could change the world and stuff like that, and it's that spirit they're trying to resuscitate.
And I understand that, and I suspected that, frankly. However, if to someone who was five then, this is what gets conjured, you know, tear gas bombs and dispatches from the barricade and stuff like that. If that's happening to me, who else is it happening to?
Yeah, and there have been some divisions among protesters and, you know, what kind of banners you want to get behind or what kind of responses we'll have if the police come down on the protesters.
Well, and I think this information is something that people need to hear if they're, among others, if they're planning on going to Denver. And what this story says, Preston, is Denver officials weren't planning to reveal details about where activists would be detained in the event of mass arrests during the Democratic National Convention until after the event had started. But those plans were quickly dashed this week when CBS 4 News reporter Rick Salinger not only revealed that protesters would be locked up in a city-owned warehouse, but he also obtained clear video footage inside the facility, a building that includes barbed wire-topped cages and signs warning of stun gun use. The convention jail is located in a warehouse northeast of Denver, and when Salinger arrived unannounced with a camera crew to shoot the facility, the door was wide open, allowing the disturbing images of caged holding pens. And this is at ColoradoIndependent.com. Look up barbed wire stun gun. You can find it. There's a link to disturbing images of caged holding pens. Each of the fenced-in areas is about 15 feet by 15 feet with a lock on the door. A sign on the wall reads, "Warning, electric stun gun device, electric stun devices used in this facility."
Yep. You know, there are a lot of considerations, and it's a lot of intimidations going on. And it's ominous in some ways, but we need to remember, you know, so many protests that don't get reported on. I remember Longshore protest, I think an Oakland Longshore person protest, and they brought out the wooden bullets for that one,
mm-hmm.
getting shot in the face. Those past WTO protests after the success of the 1999 Seattle WTO protests, they came down on people like a ton of bricks. People were getting tasered. You know,
sure. And see, that's one of my, I take it as a genuine, it's a general policy of mine, Preston, not to antagonize really nervous people with a lot of weapons.
Yeah.
So if I'm seeing that graphic that we just described, which, no, all that was a joke. See, that was a Photoshop job. Hey, it's a picture of somebody with a gun standing in front of the Democratic National Convention. All right?
Mm-hmm.
The people with the guns who are already nervous as long-tailed cats in rocking chair factories are going to look at that. Now, yeah, do I believe that pissed-off Hillary supporters are going to be running around the streets of Denver with bandoliers and Playtex 18-hour bras? No!
Yeah. Well, and the people with the real guns, they may even be the ones creating those images.
They may be. And then they use the...
To caricature the protesters.
Right, and then they use the worn-out moniker of national security.
Right, right. And also, you know, kind of a preemptive, let us do whatever we say we need to do kind of stuff. I mean...
And we let it go, but we let it go by because, Preston, and I think this is a fair question, what does a protest... Because there's no indication that there is no probable cause to believe that there's going to be a riot. What nexus is there between a protest by irritated liberals outside the convention hall? What's the nexus between that and some idea of national security?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this the same mindset that's, well, you know, they're rioting in Watts, and you know, next thing you know, it'll be happening Bug Tussle.
It's a real fear of democracy. Elites fear democracy.
Yes.
You know, they've been doing stuff to help themselves for years and years and years, and when they see people getting organized and motivated, they get worried. And so how do you undercut that? You know, constantly divide people, neutralize them, scare them, distract them. You know, they don't only exploit our fears, but they exploit our joys as well. And, you know, I think encourage just a kind of hedonistic lifestyle sometimes. You know, will we spend $8 billion on, you know, all sorts of things, but I don't know. So elites are working to divide us. But, you know, I don't want to leave it. Just the FBI coming down and cops and all this stuff. A lot of these protests, there's a lot of popular sentiment in favor of Obama, the movement, Obama bumper stickers all over the place. And I don't think we're going to be intimidated away. And I don't think we're going to be divided enough to, you know, it's going to do some harm. But I think we're still going to make achievements. We're still going to move forward on a number of things. I mean, already Obama's just that he's there and he's saying what he's saying, and that his reverend could say what he said, and he's still in the running for this. That's progress. I mean, this would not have been accepted by the general public not too long ago, and now I think it'd be interesting to see a poll of how many people agree with Reverend Jeremiah Wright. I think it's more people than they want to talk about. That would be an interesting point.
Right, because they have to define Jeremiah Wright as something that he is not.
Yeah, and now we've got people like Bill Moyers, you know, giving a broader view of who he is. And, yeah, I think there are a lot of people exploring, like, black liberation theology and stuff like that. And also, you know, you and I kind of disagreed on NPR and its role. And, you know, we talk a lot about the terrible media and the bought media. And NPR, there's certainly plenty of issues with it. I agree. But just today, they interviewed the producer of The Wire. And he talked about, you know, Terry Gross said, you know, that show creates a lot of empathy for people we don't typically feel empathy for. And he said, well, thank you. And that's what we were hoping to do. And another part of The Wire to show that, you know, our drug war is so venal and so dangerous, and we need to move beyond it. Moments like that on NPR, I think, are tremendously valuable.
They are. I agree. However, Preston... And this is I'm trying to keep myself in check here, because I don't want to just be negative. I'm glad I know I've got a pretty good idea of what the demographic is of people who listen to NPR, and it's frankly a similar problem that we face here, and that I think it's probably fair to say Nova M or Air America faces as well. and that is the concept of preaching to the choir.
Well, I'll say this. I think that there's an element of truth to that, but that choir's been getting a lot bigger over the past decade. Their numbers are now eclipsing Limbaugh's most exaggerated numbers. And I think that's very helpful that the choir grows. And also, I think some of its audience would surprise us at times. I know they've got right-wing listeners, a lot of them, and they call in from time to time, and they've got some interesting dialogues going on. And Science Friday, that's always, radical in its own way to talk about solar power, what Jimmy Carter was pushing all those years ago. They're talking about it again, positive visions being resuscitated. I think that's another thing that sometimes we harm ourselves with is a lack of a positive vision sometimes. I don't know.
Poppy Bush and the vision thing.
Well,
I'm sorry. Every time I hear the word vision, I think of that old fraud. I don't do the vision thing.
Really? He said that? George Bush the first said that?
Yeah, I don't do the vision thing.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know. It can be useful, I guess, at times. But anyway, I've rambled.
Well, we've got an email query for you.
Okay.
I bring people on and we have conversations and they develop their own fan bases. The person writes in and says, "Sorry, Preston. Any person that would name their group Recreate 68 is an idiot." Unless the desire is to injure the Democratic Party. What's the name of that guy's women's group? C-Words United for Free Dead Babies?
I don't think that's a very good analogy. And again, I'd suggest look at the website. And the guy, Glenn, is not an idiot. I can assure you of that. Very courageous guy, actually. He's been involved in a number of very worthwhile grassroots efforts, including a lot of indigenous rights issues here. Sometimes I disagree with his tactics, but,
And that's, and I think that's the point, Preston, is that while I don't believe in doing everything by committee, because I know that they don't build monuments to committees, and somebody has to, lead, follower, get out of the way, I adhere to that as well. Sober reflection, is that me talking about sober stuff. Sober reflection, though, I get, it's like, let's go to heaven 67. 67 was the summer of love. And Jefferson Airplane's Surrealistic Pillow came out and all that. I get it. But we're talking about imagery for people who don't have time to do imagery.
And I guess part of the battle is to remake that imagery. Who's going to define the imagery for us? I can assure you, when he gets on the airwaves, he's been interviewed a lot in the media, and a lot of people challenge him in a lot of different ways. And in his answers, he provides a lot of new imagery, and he handles himself extremely well. And this is a guy who's been, talk about intimidation efforts. He called into a radio, he was invited to talk on a radio show, actually, here in Denver about a year ago when that Ward Churchill scandal was going on. And he was speaking with two hosts, they're both lawyers, very skilled rhetoricians, but he took them on, he showed up, and they were debating, some of Churchill's points in his writings about the Black Panthers and the American Indian movement and militancy issues. And right towards the end, one of them said something like, well, did the Black Panthers have a right to have guns or something? And he said they had a right to defend themselves.
Well, there you have it.
And the next day.
And some of it is about learning to fight the fight and learning. I hate to say this because I wish we could all just have, straight up friendly conversations. But we can't because the other side doesn't necessarily want them. They want the confrontation.
Definitely.
And sometimes you have to put your fist in their face, metaphorically speaking. And so when somebody says, well, did the Black Panthers have a right to have guns? The answer to that is, did Timothy McVeigh have a right to have a truckload of TNT?
Right. And Glenn said also, did the police have a right to be terrorizing the poor black people in Chicago? And one of the hosts, his father, was a cop in Chicago. He totally blew up. The next day, the guy goes to work. He worked for, like, the city of Longmont. The police are there. He has his computer seized, and he's put on leave. And the progressive community, and he's marched out of his office. You know, thankfully, the guy's a totally great worker. You know, he wasn't, like, doing anything on the Internet that so many people would be busted for. Great recommendations. But, you know, he's wondering if he was going to have his job and stuff like that. And then one of the radio hosts on the show sues him, tries the strategic litigation against his participation after a remark he made. You know, I don't even remember what it was, but the suit got thrown out. It was purely for intimidation purposes. And this guy, he's a baby and a wife and mortgages and bills to pay and all this, and he puts it out there. And I can assure you, he is not an idiot. What he's doing is very worthwhile, and the people involved with that. Other people who don't agree, fine. You know, some have broken off and they're doing their own thing, Code Pink and others. You know, they've got a different approach, but they're mutually respective. That's the problem. We're so often dismissing each other instantly. That's another habit of mind. Instead of saying, you know, I don't agree with you, but I respect you and good luck to you, it's, I don't agree with you, you as an idiot, you're doing this wrong and that wrong, da-da-da-da-da.
And,
you know, and your supporters,
you know,
are wrong. See, that's what we're doing with Clinton right now. That's what Rhodes did with Ralph Nader and Nader supporters. It's destroying ourselves.
And you're not going to get any disagreement out of me on that, because whether it's agents provocateurs or agitators or whatever, or infiltrators, how can anybody in their right mind look at any given movement and not, and I have some experience with this, and not look and say, you know, look around the room. Somebody in here is on the take from the CIA or Homeland Security. How can you not do that?
I mean, if they're infiltrating small Quaker groups, we know that for a fact.
They were doing surveillance on vegetarians protesting outside Heavenly Ham.
Right, right. We can only imagine what they're doing regarding the Obama campaign, regarding progressive media efforts.
You know, you mentioned, you know, the CIA agents who actively worked against Jimmy Carter. Yeah, that's not suspicion. That's truth. Those are facts.
Yeah, that whole OSS report just came out. Julia Child and so many others involved with. And again, to kind of ease the kind of, you know, paranoia that can envelop us, there are people within these intelligence agencies that are okay, and they are doing important work. These aren't monoliths. You know, there are different factions doing different things. We worry about the right-wing elements, you know, the sort that will try to disrupt progressive movements here or overthrow rulers or leaders, democratically elected leaders in other countries. But there are other people in these intelligence agencies that are just listening and monitoring. Sometimes
sure.
They're sympathetic. We have it.
Well, and it's like the little dialogue we've got going on here. The same writer who wrote a minute ago wrote back to say, I honor and care about Preston's thoughts, but viewed in the world of bumper sticker statements, and I get what he's saying, viewed in the world of bumper sticker statements, I think Recreate 68 has more downside than upside and says all the best to Preston.
Yeah, yeah. You may be right, but I have a different advantage. I may be wrong, but I think...
Because you have sought to inform yourself and sought to at least try to see the side of the debate being put forward by those folks.
Yeah, I'm just privy to more of it.
And they've been, you know, but the news stories that I saw last week with this group saying, I forget what particular thing it was on the Denver authorities part, said it was overkill because they had already signed an agreement not to throw poop. And yeah, forgive me, I'm just sitting here up the holler in West Virginia scratching my pointy little head going, agreements? We're signing poop treaties now before the Democratic convention? There, you know,
preemptive poop strikes, right?
Right. You know, there's a Balrog in the chicken coop.
Yeah. Yeah, some of this stuff is going to be out of our hands, you know. I mean, there's just, and this is old tactics. You know, they really did this against labor organizers.
Sure.
Earlier time to try to caricature them as, you know, a threat to our
Bolsheviks.
Yep.
Sit down, you know, you sit down and you watch John Sayles' great film, Mate One.
Yeah.
And there is a character in there, he's a storekeeper, and there's truth to it. There was a storekeeper in Mate One, West Virginia, his name was C.W. Lively. And, you know, there's Livelys all over West Virginia to this day. It's a common name. C.W. Lively was a storekeeper. And he let the fledgling UMWA local meet in the back of his store. Well, he was on the take from the Baldwin Felts Detective Agency. And every word that was uttered by that young union group was sent back to the Baldwin thugs. And literally, and after the Mate One uprising, you know, because a bunch of the Baldwin thugs got killed, or a couple of them got killed, it was the Mate One massacre. No, it was the Mate One uprising. It was a bunch of working people standing up saying, you know, had enough.
Yep.
You know, you poke a gun in the belly of my pregnant wife, it's probably going to get ugly.
Yep.
C.W. Lively had to flee. And I saw an interview years back with his son or grandson saying, you know, he went to his grave believing that he was protecting America from the communists.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff was used. Yeah, I remember the Quebec story from what was one of those summits a few years back, where lo and behold, the Quebecois security forces were the ones who were screaming for the protesters to start throwing rocks.
Yep, there you go. That's I remember that as well. You bet. This is standard operating procedure, and just be on guard. Real quickly, I heard you mention that phrase: "The unexamined life is not worth living." Yeah. Was that Socrates or?
Socrates via Plato.
Okay, right. I think philosophy can be so helpful to get us through so much stuff. I think there's a book out called Plato, Not Prozac. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I haven't gotten to dig into it really recently or very deeply yet, but I did have the opportunity to hear these I forget what it's called, but it was this philosophy series on tape, and it was actually narrated by Charlton Heston, and he did a masterful job of narrating this stuff. And he's kind of little biographies on Spinoza and John Dewey was the guy who said democracy begins in conversation, and great stuff, and I think helps.
Hey, I think we've got a new motto for the network.
That would be great, and then also real quickly on controlling imagery, and it's not just the imagery of Obama, you know, that's getting battled over, McCain's as well. And I got in touch with somebody who's coming here, and he directed a film, a documentary called Vietnam, American Holocaust. And his contention is that, you know, he wants to be here because we can't let McCain define his service in a particular way. It was not a service to the country. What it was is this archival footage that he's compiled together in this film. Again, Vietnam, American Holocaust, and you can see some trailers from it on YouTube. Incredibly disturbing stuff, but things that we need to face. And not a heroic thing, and we need to think about more than just our losses. You know, it would take 80 walls for the Vietnamese losses. And actually, there's a quote, as I was looking at the trailers of this film, that came to mind. Do you know The Unbearable Lightness of Being?
Yes.
Milan Kundera?
Right.
He said, "The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting."
And I have read that, and that is a beautiful thing.
Okay.
And yeah, I remember reading that quote once upon a time, Preston, and I was reminded, you know, not that I'm, you know, somebody, but the argument that I have frequently made about how right-wing policies keep getting their hooks into America. Mm-hmm. And that is the power, the struggle of memory against forgetting. Everything that we're going through today, your or our either grandparents, great-grandparents, or great-great-grandparents went through as adults. This yeah. nation has been to this movie before.
Yes.
You can track the Bush administration alongside, well, you can track Reagan, Bush 1, and Bush 2 alongside Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, blow by blow, lick for lick. And the outcome is the same. But the problem lies in the fact, and I think this is worth mentioning, and I hope you'll bear with me for just a moment.
Okay.
We passed yesterday the 73rd birthday of Social Security. A happy birthday Social Security cake was delivered to the New Mexico headquarters of John McCain for president. They threw it in the trash.
Okay.
Could there be a better image for the Republican response to Social Security?
Right.
And I say that because I saw lots of stuff come through my email inbox about the 73rd birthday and protests being marked here and there. In none of these, Preston, in none of these emails did I see any mention of the fact that the Social Security Act was passed during the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration without a single Republican vote in either House of Congress.
That's something to remember.
Okay.
Definitely.
And what happened, though, the power of the struggle of memory against forgetting, what happened is that in the attempt to save this country from the Great Depression, the Republicans were almost, or maybe I'm wrong in saying the Republicans, but that brand of so-called conservative thought was almost destroyed. But it's almost like it's like something out of the Lord of the Rings, where the shadow flees to the dark tower in the forest to reconstitute its strength, and the shadow fled, and it did reconstitute its strength. And it didn't. The return of the Republican Party is not manifested by the election of Dwight Eisenhower, because Dwight Eisenhower could have been a Democrat or a Republican, because it was almost like a coin toss for him, as I understand the history. He was courted by both parties. The rise of the Republican Party happens immediately following the absolute humiliation that Barry Goldwater took in November of 1964. And that is when the right, the shadow came out of its tower and declared itself again. And they said, we're not going to, you know, they almost killed us, but we're going to kill them. And that eliminationist rhetoric has been the heart and soul of Republican politics since. They've talked about killing, gutting, how many times? Gutting Social Security, killing Social Security, the drowning government in a bathtub. Eliminationist rhetoric is the heart and soul of the Republican Party. And the reason it's still being talked is because those generations back did not, once and for all, put an end to the kind of conservative policies that persistently, intergenerationally do us so much damage. Does that make any sense? Have I made any sense?
Sure. And I just add that, you know, what's the dominating imagery of conservatism? Is it warmongering and ever more inflated weapons budgets are? Is it like, the book that I'm reading right now called Ain't My America, The Long Noble History of Anti-War Conservatism and Middle American Anti-Imperialism. Fascinating book. Again, what are we remembering about what these terms mean? Who's defining these terms? And real quickly, that director who's coming to the convention, that's the sort of thing, you know, putting aside the urine and the poop bombs and what the cops might do and all that kind of stuff with the tasers or whatever, this other stuff is going on, like directors coming here to show their films. and you know, Code Pink will be here doing their thing. You know, Ed Schultz is coming here, and he's going to have a party at some steakhouse. And so there's a lot of good going on.
Well, Guy James is going to be there. Mark Levine says one way or the other he will broadcast live from the convention, so the Horn will have a presence.
Okay, and if you can't make it, again, I think there are actually some other gatherings that I think would be a better strategy.
Well, and the one that you mentioned in our email exchange, I think, is a great one. I just heard about one today, and I've already taken some steps to address it because this one speaks to me as well.
Great.
On September the 27th in Philadelphia, you wouldn't know anything about Philadelphia, would you, President? In Philadelphia, BuzzFlash is hosting something that they're calling Bridging the Gap Between Progressives and the Working Class, a Dialogue on Common Values. Now, this event, they're looking for anywhere from 340 to 650 people at the Philadelphia Convention Center in the heart of the city. They're going to have panels, and they're going to have speakers such as Richard Trumka, who is next in line to run the AFL-CIO behind John Sweeney.
Yeah.
They're going to have David K. Johnston, whom many Horn listeners may remember from a couple of weeks ago.
Great.
Our dear friend Joe Bagent is going to be there. And there's going to be a whole lot more folks.
That sounds fantastic. You know, I mean, that sounds a lot better than a lot of, you know.
Well, so here's what I did. Here's what I did, Preston.
Okay.
I just heard about this today. I immediately called and left a detailed message with the office of Mark Carlin, who runs BuzzFlash.
Okay.
And I said, listen, here's what we want to do. We are an independent, internet-based liberal radio network. We have the capacity to provide you, for your purposes, unlimited audio streaming. You want 340 to 650 people to be there. We want thousands of good liberals and progressives to enjoy and to be a part of this dialogue.
Fantastic.
So we want to go there, and we want to stream this for you. We want to provide the infrastructure, and so, you know, I'm hoping I get a call back.
Hey, me too, definitely. That's a great idea. And
because this is a conversation that has to happen. You know, progressives and the working class, I think it's possible to be working class and be progressive at the same time, but I'm not going to quibble over semantics.
Right.
Okay? You've got people there who can talk about what the reality is. Richard Trumka at the AFL-CIO, he can talk about on-the-ground reality of what 8 years of the Bush administration has done to working people and why organized labor is the answer. It's a very simple answer to a lot of questions and a lot of problems that we have in this country. I mean, for heaven's sakes, if every working American belongs to a union, the health care crisis solves itself.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Joe Bagent's going to be there, and nobody is better than Joe at addressing the question of how we reach our brothers and sisters in the so-called red states who have been alienated by our side of the discussion. Nobody's better than that. And then David K. Johnston comes on and lays it out for you by the daggum numbers of how you're being ripped off. I mean, by the time 6 o'clock in Philly rolls around on September the 27th, there ought not be any questions left.
Yeah.
There ought to be a unified front. And I sincerely hope that Mr. Carlin will take me up on my offer to make this available, not after the fact, not necessarily as a podcast, but live and real time for people to hear these things and work on chat infrastructure and question infrastructure so that people can have direct access to the, you know, for instance, to the question times for the panels.
That would be great. Definitely. Yeah. I hope he gets back to you. You know, sometimes the left drops the ball on that stuff, doing that kind of great strategizing and networking and collaborating, but keep after it for sure. And best of luck with that.
Well, I'm going to, and I hope I don't make a nuisance of myself. But I told the young lady that I spoke to and invited her to check out the horn. I told her, you know, she said, is it okay if he calls you over the weekend? I said, he can call me 24/7. There's always a phone wherever I am because that's the way I work here. And so if I haven't heard back from him by Monday, I'll try to get hold of him. And then I told Joe Bajant, I shot Joe an email, told Joe what was on my mind, and he said, I'm forwarding this to Mark right now.
And, you know, and don't hesitate to ask the community of your listeners for assistance if you need some gas money and lodging money and all that good stuff. I'm sure there are plenty of people, myself included, who would be happy to help you out.
Well, I think, I think things like that, because, you know, Preston, I want to make things abundantly clear. This is not about my ego, okay? This is not about, you know, me wanting somebody to, you know, play Hail the Conquering Hero for me. I'm absolutely halfway insane with the desire to end what we started this conversation on, to end this ability of the other side to infiltrate or to create divisive memes for us.
Yep.
And for us in turn to be able to create our own reality.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How in the world does a guy who makes $20 million a year even begin to be competent to discuss whether or not somebody who works by the sweat of his brow should be entitled to be a part of a unit that can collectively bargain with his employer? Where did that ever get any realistic traction in our discussion?
Right.
Howard Hughes is competent to talk about the meat and potatoes issue of a family that makes choices between paying the insurance bill and buying tires? Oh, my aching back!
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you brought up the ego thing, because that's something that's often hurled at people. Whenever they speak up, people just almost reflexively have learned to throw the ego charge, egomaniac, megalomaniac. You know, King got it. Jesse Jackson gets it. Lots of people get it. And there might even be an element of truth to it. You know, we're all flawed, and it happens sometimes, whatever. We do think of ourselves or whatever. But, you know, largely, it's about self-defense. It's about self-defense of ourselves, our health, our, you know, working-class people that we feel empathy for.
And that ego.
Solidarity with.
Exactly. And I don't mean to keep you on too long, Preston, but we haven't had one of these in a long time, and these are dandies. It reminds me of a protest that was put out decades ago when John L. Lewis was going to sit down to hammer out a collective bargaining agreement with the Bituminous Coal Operators of America. And you know what the Bituminous Coal Operators said? Well, look at John L. Lewis. Look at him. He comes in here and he says he represents miners. Well, he's wearing better suits than we wear.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing hand-tailored fancy suits, and he's going to speak for the miners? Who does he think he is?
And he has a $400 haircut or a $1,000 haircut?
Ain't nothing changes, Preston.
Right.
But bless their hearts, the UMWA rank and file stood up and said, you know what? We paid for them suits because we want him to sit down at the table with you, and we want you to know that he's better than you are. And that's something we've got to figure out.
Yeah, and remember don't forget that other part of that coin of nothing ever changes. Yes, they're always coming at us with these assaults and these deceptions and these ripoffs and these aggressions. Yes, but the other part that never changes is that people are always resisting.
Right, and they never stop, and we never do either.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, Preston, I tell you what a wonderful conversation this has been. I really, really do appreciate it.
Me too, Bob. Definitely.
You take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Conversation radio, my friends. That is what it sounds like. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm going to call you at 3:30 in the morning and ask for some Frankenberry cereal.
You do that, and I will reach through
Oh, my God. Preston does not win the USB toaster when he talks about Glenn Spagnuolo. Stay away from that guy. Holy crap. Preston. I always ask two questions. These are two valid questions you got to ask, Bob. You ask, what's the background of this guy or this girl, and where does he get his funding from? Game over. As soon as you find out those two questions, you know where they're coming from.
Okay, you have answers to those?
Yes, I do. Glenn Spagnola has a serious background in law enforcement.
How do you mean?
I mean, riot gear police. I don't know what his background training is, but there's also the T-shirts that he's associated with like that. He has a T-shirt. I mean, this is a perfect Trojan horse. I mean, if you look and you Google his name, which I encourage people to do, Google Glenn Spagnola, you'll see a lot of matches come up for Free Republic. You'll see a lot of matches come for Michelle Malkin, and they're always promoting that this happens. It's a Trojan horse, people.
But are they, these links at places like Freeperville and Malkinville, are they mentions of him in positive light or negative light?
It's a negative light, but they want it to happen. You see what I'm saying?
That they're creating the publicity?
They want the riot to happen.
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. Operation Chaos.
Right, exactly. And here's the thing about Glenn, you guys got to understand. He doesn't come out and say violence. This is the classic ploy, classic Trojan horse move. I'm not advocating violence. Look at the poster, people. Look at the poster. Pay attention to it. Just look at it and see the messages. And then look at his T-shirts. That's what I suggest you do. Look at the Defend Denver T-shirt. Why the hell is there an AK-47 on it? Huh? Why is there an AK-47 on it? You know, and I know why there's an AK-47 on it. Because that's exactly what they want to bring. See, liberals...
Wait. Okay, I don't want to get lost here, David.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that that organization is putting out a T-shirt that has an AK-47 on the front?
No. They associate with that kind of thing. They don't talk down about it. You see, Bob, it's where the thing where they do like they have the neo-Nazi party wandering with the right-wing Christians kind of thing. They don't say, well, and then they have them on the radio programs. And that's another thing. How the hell did Glenn Spagnola get on all these right-wing radio shows? Where did he get those connections? And how did he get able to just be out in the front of so much media? And I'll tell you why. Because it's a Trojan horse, people. Stay away.
Okay. You don't think it's because, Ward Churchill was on a bunch of right-wing radio and talk shows at one point, too, because they were trying to turn him into the whipping. The Reverend Wright showing up on what, O'Reilly or Hannity or any of those freaks? I mean, now, I tend to say, I tend to urge, you may have heard it a week ago. I think we were having a conversation with our buddy Ed, and I said, liberals and progressives have got to learn to just leave right-wing media alone. Let them flap in the wind. Let them hang themselves on their own petard, but quit enabling them.
Exactly.
You don't think that these right-wing shows go to somebody like, say, a Ward Churchill and say, yeah, come on the show, and they go on because they think that they're going to give their side of the argument and they're... might have a little bit of political, not so much political, but media-oriented naivete, and think that they can actually speak their mind when the other side controls the dump button and the mute button and the camera button and all the magic buttons. You don't think there's a little bit of naivete involved?
Critical thinking 101. Why is Glenn Spagnola just promoting? He's not advocating riots. I'll be Glenn Spagnola. I've watched him in interviews, Bob. I'm not advocating riots. Then why is he not advocating and promoting support for protesting the RNC? He's not. Look into it.
Because he ain't.
Because
the RNC ain't in Denver.
No. That's not. No, I mean. His organization could get behind protesting Republic organizations as well, and they're not. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I understand now. I'm not necessarily gainsaying what you're putting forward. That's part of the problem, as Preston and I discussed it, is we don't know. We just simply do not know where these SOBs have infiltrated. And again, I bring up, because it's to me the poster child. If you, well, they're all the poster children for domestic spying and domestic paranoia. If you are spying on organizations that, by definition, within their charters,
right,
maintain that all of their efforts will be nonviolent, why do you need to spy on them? Okay, that's the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Friends Service Committee, the Quakers. That is literally the little vegetarian group that maybe it was PETA, I don't know, that protested outside Heavenly Ham in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But they are at their cores, they're nonviolent. Why do you need to infiltrate them? Because it's the nonviolent part that scares it water bowels an authoritarian government. Because nonviolence is the one thing that can stop authoritarians. You know, Gandhi proved it. Dr. King proved it. You know, if you espouse, and so there's a need to get an agitator in there. Well, you know, nonviolence will only go so far. You know, I think it's time we start learning to build a bomb.
I agree with you, Bob, and I would say this to progressives and liberals listening to this program and critical thinkers. I don't care what your political persuasion is. I've listened to Glenn Spagnuolo in interviews. He talks in code. And what I mean by code, he bobs and weaves when it comes to anarchism and anarchists coming to convention. Now, you frame that exactly what Rush was saying. It's along the same lines. But they're not saying, we're not advocating riots, but we are going to stand up for our rights. And there are going to be, and I mean, again, it goes
back. Yeah, but
back
that's the same thing as saying, my friends, I'm not a politician. I'm not a political scientist. I'm just an entertainer. Somebody needs to hang Howard Dean.
Yeah, exactly. And my point is this. The guy has a shady background. Literally, he just popped out of nowhere. Where he gets his funding from, and the stations that he was just able to hop on. I'm not saying someone made a call or something, but what I am saying is the guy just literally appeared from smoke, and just all of a sudden this website was there, and pretty much he had all the funding, and all of a sudden you had the right wing saying, well, I don't like what the guy's saying, but well, I'm for it, kind of thing. I mean, so my point is this, is the same thing that's happening with, did you hear about what's happening with Fred Phelps?
Not lately. Is he dead?
No.
Damn.
This is important, too. I'm not going to name his website because that's given promotion and we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
But, Bob, if you go to his website, and I went to it recently, there are significant changes. And when I mean significant changes, I mean there's an overhaul, Bob. It looks better than some progressive and liberal sites. It's got a video section. His tour dates look like he's the freaking Rolling Stones.
Okay, I'm sorry. You made me laugh. That's not fair in the middle of a serious conversation.
I know, but the tour dates are like the Rolling Stones.
But Fred, Fred, you could stand Fred and Ron Wood and Mick together, and there's okay. I'll shut up.
Here's my critical thinking question of the night: who designed that site? Who designed that site, and who is now funding Fred Phelps and his organization for this worldwide tour around the United States? Who is letting him go to, I don't know if you heard about this, he's going to get McKay's and Bernie Maxwell's, for God's sake.
God, like I've been saying all night, you know, I'm going to shut this thing down and meet y'all at the beer joint.
But
they're protesting. Bernie Mac died of a lung disease.
I know, what they say is that Bernie Mac was for the rights of gay people, and they bring that up on their, I don't want to explain their rationality for it, because there is no rationality for it.
Okay, by the way, I've just been given, and this is one of those things where we talk about a visual on the radio and it's poison, but I've just been shot a link to the T-shirt for Recreate 68.
Yeah.
There's no gun on it.
There's
a tank on it.
No, the shirts that, it's a touchy issue. He's not associated with directly, but he hasn't, what I'm saying is he doesn't condone it. There's a defend Denver, there's a defend different locations of conventions and everything like that. And the defend Denver t-shirt is the one with the AK-47 on it.
Okay, I'm looking around. Okay, I can't find a defenddenver.org or a defenddenver.com, but.
Okay, well,
all right, I think there was a little bit of unclarity there because people were getting the idea that there was a gun on the, but there's not.
Recreate 68 stuff. It's the shirts that are associated.
But by the same token, our buddy Reverbo wrote in, and he said that's exactly the point. People don't have the time or inclination to seek the truth. Unfortunately, for most Americans, the truth had better be at or near the surface. Recreate 68, sorry, good intentions, horrible name, use some judgment.
I agree with him to an extent, but like I said, there's serious questions about this guy and his associations and why the fact that he ignores a lot of they're not sure where he stands. But, you know, getting back to the Phelps thing, I think there is a story where Mr. Phelps is getting his funding because his website is, like I said, it's to another level where it was before. Also, he has a tour around the United States where you just have to ask this question. Who is funding Mr. Phelps now? And I think one of the things that you could do to trace back some of that is find out who designed his website. And then you find out.
Start with hosting.
Yeah, the organization. Then you go next to the organizations that this website is tied to. Because I got to tell you, Bob, if I was a web designer, I would not want that on my portfolio, and I would not even want to chance anything like that.
Well, you know what? That is a very, very significant observation. Because, you know, we're thinking about hiring you. What kind of work have you done? Well, I designed Fred Phelps's website. we'll call you if we need you.
I mean, it's the fact that here's my problem with it. If a guy did it for work and he needed the money, okay, but I have questions because we have sites like The Smoking Gun and Media Matters. You're going to get found out eventually. If you do something like this, no one's going to cover your ass like that. They'll find out. So my point about this is the fact that I think there's something seriously awry with
I ask myself these questions all the time. All right. And let me make this by way of an example that's much more prosaic. I have seen, just driving around, you know, from here southward, I've seen these Chinese super buffet restaurants, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, from here to Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, I've seen them all over, all right? And they all have the same food in the troughs in the buffet bars, okay? I mean, it's literally a little C Catholic universality. And yet these are all little family-run operations. I've seen the same Mexican restaurant menu in West Virginia that I saw in Alabama. I mean, right down to the typos, okay? And I see these things, and I wonder, you know, how is this organized?
Exactly.
Because this is far too much to just be chance, and these are individual little family-owned restaurants, okay?
Yeah.
And so I see what you're saying in terms of looking at these things and one, you know, how does this happen? And I could sit here, but I'm not gonna. I could sit here and probably name off five websites on supposedly on our side of the debate that you wonder where'd they come from, because they seem to come from smoke.
Exactly. But the thing with the Phelps is, see, this is the thing that's key about it. You know, and I know, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, that
now Fred Phelps' grandson runs and designs their website. I'm seeing that in the chat room. Yeah, Broadus just mentioned that.
The interesting thing about that, though, Bob, is it's a considerably different development than it was before. I mean, it looked like a Drudge Report site, for God's sake.
And that really is the benchmark for crappy websites, isn't it?
I mean, that's my point. I don't think. Here's my problem with when people say, well, they just had some family members throw it up in it. No, you can tell. You literally look at the way it's done. Just look at his tour dates, for God's sakes. Bob, I'm telling you, he has more tour dates than Maroon 5.
You know, you can take the pop culture correspondent away from the topic, but you can't take the topic away from the culture pop culture correspondent.
Yeah, and one last thing before I go, it's regarding the Pumas thing, and I think people will get a kick out of this. It's if you look on the Daily Coast website, they talk about, there's a letter that says, "Dear Pumas, we have lodging at a 5-star hotel, and what you need before you need to register a $250 price." They give you the rundown, what breakfast, lunch, and is included. Well, then after weeks of pitching this, see, this is the problem with my point with the Pumas. It is such a red herring from the beginning, which is one of the reasons why I didn't talk about it, but this pretty much just hits it home, Bob. They claim they have 2.2.5 million members range, but they could only get together 60 people for the conference. And because they didn't meet the 250 registrant requirement imposed by the wardman, they had to move the conference to, get this, the Country Inn next to Dulles Airport in Sterling, Virginia.
And I remember some weeks back when it was pointed out that apparently Puma, the original Puma creator, was a Bush voter, or a McCain voter from 2000. And that tells me something.
It says, not so priceless was the attendance at the events of 9/11 truthers and LaRoucheites and anti-Semites.
Jeez.
What the hell are these people doing messing around with this? This ragtag, obvious scam. You know what's funny? Do you think that those people who put up the 250 are going to get that money back?
That would be no.
Yeah, that would be no. And one last thing before I go. What did you think of that story regarding that I sent you, how Fox News framed the Canadian neo-Nazi? Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did see that. And
you know, Bob, this is where I bring it back.
I put nothing past Fox, okay?
This is where I bring it back full circle. They want to frame free speech in America, activism, militantism, dissentism, all together. So anyone talking any kind of free speech, they'll be seen as a radical. And that's exactly why they want Recreate 68 to pop off. Because they'll bring up the liberalism mental disorder lectures. They'll have the tapes. Well, they'll have the CDs, the DVDs, whatever. They'll have the streaming videos, and then they'll. And here's the thing about this, people. This is why you shouldn't listen to someone with a name organization called Recreate 68. This is the perfect talking point for any Republican if anything did pop up at this organization. Well, what happened in Recreate 68? None of these people can act civilized. That's why you shouldn't mess with it.
Okay, well, I want to give before you go, David.
Yeah.
I want to share something with you because Preston has written back in, and I don't believe in talking about people or talking about discussions after the people in the discussion aren't on the air anymore to respond. So Preston says, your caller, David, just exhibited the sort of problem I was talking about. He just made a serious innuendo about Glenn's background with nothing to back it up. David also suggested Glenn is guilty due to some association regarding a T-shirt, again with no specifics about who created the T-shirt. And David packed in a couple of other threads of thought that aren't worth much aside from doing reactionary perception managers a favor. A shady background, that's nice and vague, Preston says,
appeared from nowhere? He says, where are you from, David? How does that make you more or less legitimate? He says, I'd like to see you say this to Glenn's face. The Recreate t-shirts are quite nice, but David will skip that. Why? Regarding Glenn getting on right-wing shows, Preston says, I do the same thing. I've found it to be very useful to challenge the patterns of thought that will dominate if progressives decide not to challenge it. I wish more progressives would challenge the right-wing hosts and their station managers and their advertisers, etc. And he says, did David ever get around to telling us who he alleges is funding Glenn? And he says, David's comments are shameful on this. Best regards, Preston. And I want to take just a minute here and understand this is friendly conversation, okay, David? First of all, this is friendly conversation. And we challenge each other's ideas all the time. But with regard, I do have a respectful disagreement with Preston, and I think we've had this disagreement on air about whether to challenge wingers, the right wing, on air, or let them flap in the breeze. And my take on it, as somebody who sits behind one of these things, as somebody who has sitting before him a very expensive delay mechanism that can make callers disappear such that they never appeared in the first place, I'm still skeptical of it. Because as long as there are no fixed terms of what constitutes fairness in the discussion, it's gonna be hard to score points in that debate. As long as the mute button and the on camera button and the dump button are all controlled by the other side, getting across what is fair is going to be difficult, and that's my contention with regard to that part of the issue. But I wanted, David, to give you an opportunity to respond to the challenges that Preston has put forward.
I'll respond in the letter Monday. And Preston, I got to tell you, man, there is enough out there on characters like this that can bring them down in a heartbeat.
But what Preston wants to know is, what is that?
It has to do with it. I read some articles on him regarding his military and paramilitary background. My problem is when you're too close to the source, I start getting red flags of Trojan horses and the people that he associates with. When I read the article and when I saw his interviews, I saw someone to groom character the same way I saw John O'Neill. I'm sorry, Preston, but I call him like I see him. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you that information Monday, and you can judge for yourself. But I'm telling you, anyone that does Recreate 68, I just have to go back to what Rumsfeld said about the best way to infiltrate any dissenting organizations is to create a series of psyops across the Internet. You keep that in mind.
Well, I saw an article just last night that said the next, I think it was from The Guardian maybe, said the next future theater of war is inside the human brain. I don't know that it's ever left the human brain.
Who are the brain police, Frank Zappa?
There you go. All right, David, well, thank you. If you send that to me, I will in turn forward it on to Preston for his evaluation and his response.
I'll give him a rebuttal for Monday, and you guys can read it on the air. How's that sound?
Okay. Well, like I said, if you want, I'll just copy and paste and forward it on. You know, if you guys want to continue the discussion, that's up to you. You know, however you wish to handle it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, David.
All right.
Bye now. This isn't a personality conflict. This is a question of, and it's not simple semantics either. It's a question of how we accomplish our goals and whether or not the risks that we run of tearing each other apart before anybody can get anything accomplished. So, I'm going to facilitate this and let it go forward however it may, because I don't know that this dialogue is taking place anywhere else, at least not in real time. Let's continue with the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Andy. Long time no talk to.
Yeah, I know. We got cut off for a while.
You doing all right?
Yeah, not bad, man. How things with you guys and the family?
Yeah, we're busy. We run and run.
Yeah. Well, it's been quite interesting this evening.
I think so.
Well, yeah, I only got in at about midnight, listening to it. I was watching a film. But, yeah, I've been doing a bit of looking up at this Glenn Spag...
Spagnola?
How are you supposed to pronounce that?
Yeah, Spagnola.
Spagnola, yeah, whatever. Also the group, you know, while I've been listening to sort of been surfing about and trying to find what I can. I don't know, because I don't know the guy, but from the statements that are quoted in various places, it does seem to me like he's an agent. Just not so much, I mean, because he's not actually gone as far as promoting violence, which of course would just be too obvious, but he seems very blasé about the potential for violence. And he's, you know, he's saying it'll be the fault of the police. Well, we know that the police don't start the fight at these protests. I mean, not in Britain or America anyway. They have agents that do the fighting, and then the police can go in and clean them all up. And I'd advise everyone that to watch this in Denver and pay attention, because there will be anarchists, and these anarchists will smash a McDonald's window or a bank or something. But have a look at what they're wearing on their feet. Because in the last one, where was it? The World Trade one where they went mad somewhere in Seattle?
Yes.
Yeah. All of the anarchists that had the mad dreadlock hair or the pink dyed hair and the Mohicans and all that and the combat jackets on, they were all wearing almost identical boots, like army issue boots. Now, they were all nice and clean and bright and brand new. All of their boots. This is because they were not anarchists. You know, the people that are used as anarchists in Britain as well, when they have the protesters and stuff, the ones that always kick off are invariably unknown by anyone else there. You know, if you ask people, do you know any of those people? The press have gone around asking everyone, you know, at the front of a protest. So do you know all these crazy people who are right out the front, like throwing stuff? No, don't know any of them. You can never find out who these people were. You never find any reference to them afterwards. You never find any criminal charges being passed on them, they go to prison, they just disappear. And so that's what I'm...
And that's, you know, that's what I was talking about with what happened with the secret police, or whatever they call them, in Quebec.
Mm, yeah.
Because those were the ones who were inside the movement, the labor protesters were behaving peacefully, chanting slogans, things like that, and there's a guy going, we got to throw a rock!
Yeah. Well, because of things like that, they don't even infiltrate the groups anymore, they just set up their own group to do it, and they just turn up on the day of the protest, dressed, you know, hippie.
And really, Andy, there's nothing new in that either, because within the history of the labor movement, Boss Man Wayne told us the story one night during the nurses' strike last winter, where the company went and crippled an organizer's automobile, burned it, I think, and then said, see? They're dangerous. Them labor organizers will burn their own cars and try to blame us.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest tactics in the world.
It's recorded in history as far back as the Roman Empire, having stooges in the crowd to start things and set things off. You know, it's happened ever since governments have tried to control their peoples. And this is the problem for people in America, because you're constantly told freedom, Constitution makes you free, rights, all that's rubbish. And that hasn't been true since the outset. I mean, you and I can argue about that, Bob, but sorry, I'm sure...
We'll save it for another night.
Well, we'll have to, but I'm sure eventually you're going to come round to view it in the way it was. I mean, you know, it was never meant for men to be free under the Constitution. It was meant for white...
There was a very distinct classism involved.
Well, this is it, but it was never supposed to be extended to the common people. The Constitution of the United States is not for the people of the United States. It's for
the vote was extended to male property owners. End of debate, you know, I mean...
It could only extend as far as white male property owners, because that's the only group that they saw as citizens.
That was the only group they saw as human.
Well, yeah, and you know, the fact that we've changed what we mean, as you know, the people mean, doesn't mean that the rulers have changed what they mean. I mean, a lot of people say things like, using the term the ruling class is archaic. Well, I wouldn't say it's archaic, because they're still here. It's an active term. You know, the fact that they don't like it being used and they won't have it used in the press means that we should use it all the more, really. You know, and this is the problem we have. You know, we you guys have a ruling class that will stop at nothing. They will stoop to any low. They will do whatever.
Well, the nice thing is your ruling class wears indicia of office. Ours pretends that, you know, that anybody can become a corporate raider. You know, one of these days, just work, pick you up by your own bootstraps, and you too can be a multimillionaire. And that's a fraud.
Yeah, I mean, look at your politicians as well. Your politicians go to the people and say, traditionally, vote for me, and I will steal money from other states and bring it back to this one. That's the basic promise of all your politicians. I mean,
in many ways it is, and what I'm saying is, in some ways, Andy, it's easier on your side of the Atlantic because nobody sits down and looks their kid in the eye and says, someday, son, you'll grow up to be a member of the House of Windsor.
Well, no, but you know, I mean, arguably the ruling class in Britain is the same corporate lot that are the ruling class in the United States. I mean, you know, as much as you lot wouldn't like to admit it, the Queen is actually part of your ruling class because she owns a lot of you. I mean, you know, the royal family has very extensive investments in American corporations.
Oh, sure.
What they refer to
the Dutch, too, for that matter. I mean, and that's...
Bob, do you know what the royal family refer to themselves as?
No.
In their jokey name for the family. They call themselves The Firm.
The Firm. Oh, why am I not surprised?
Well, because they're a bunch of mafia dons, you know. And the royal family are just the ones we can see. I mean, they're not even that rich compared to some of your families, dude. I mean, you know, how much are the Rockefellers worth? I mean...
Point taken, point scored.
Yeah, you know. And your corporate system is established purely to serve these people now. I mean, the rules have been corrupted. It's all been taken away. Barack Obama is not going to change this, as I told you a long time ago. At best.
And while I advocate his election, Andy,
oh yeah.
I do so with my eyes wide open.
Yeah, and your mouth should be open, screaming at him as well. And this is the thing: once you've got him in, at least he can be pushed. He's a Democrat; he can be pushed in the right direction. It will be.
Now there are some that are giving up on that idea too. On our side, there are some who are saying, you know, do you really think that you're going to push Barack Obama anywhere?
Well,
and frankly, I feel a little foolish because back before the 2006 off-year elections, Andy, I said, you know, we will be harder on the Democrats than we ever were on the Republicans, and we've lived up to that.
Well,
but it doesn't seem to have done a hell of a lot of good.
Well, at the moment, there's not the grass. Like I've told you, it's the grassroots. I mean, you need to start taking over county seats. You need to start taking over school boards. You need to. That's where Democrats need to start working.
Absolutely. Very polite little golf clap for that. Absolutely. And again, that's something I've hollered about. You know, we love presidential politics and we love major statewide politics because it's got a lot of sociodynamic psychosocial pressure behind it.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
The really banal way to take power is to get on the county commission.
Well, yeah, I mean, the president doesn't actually get to choose very much. I mean, people might think that the president gets to choose things. I mean, yeah, okay, he could declare a war, and if he's got a do-nothing Congress, he can get it started. But, I mean, in terms of actually, like, you know, doing stuff in the world, well, the president has to react just the same as any other world leader. But when you're talking about local politics, you're not connected to that. What's going on with whoever, where. You don't have to worry about that. That's irrelevant. What you need to work on is are the poor people getting fed? Are the homeless starving to death or freezing to death or boiling to death? You know, and once you start working at the very basic level and you go out and you say the reason you're getting this support, poor person, or the reason that the streets are clean, rich person, or the reason we have police on the streets, middle class person, is because you pay taxes and I, as a Democrat or whatever the hell their party affiliation is, work for you. And work for you personally, all of you people. And that's what you need to have people doing. I mean, it's all well and good electing people to, you know, trying to get people to replace Nancy Pelosi. But if Nancy Pelosi is getting, like, smashed left, right, and center by constitutionally mandated organizations in her state, like, because they're saying to her, you're failing it, you know, if all the county councils that are under her remit just sent her a protest letter saying, because of the actions of the president and the actions of you, the inaction of you, we're suffering. If you had control, you could do that, but you don't, so you can't. And that sort of pressure is as great as public pressure. In fact, it's probably greater because it comes up through the system.
I tend to agree.
The problem is nobody wants to concentrate on low-level stuff.
Nobody wants to concentrate on low-level stuff. It's not sexy enough. And, frankly, the other thing that curses us at the low level is there's an old West Virginia joke that may not translate across the Atlantic, but it has to do with food subsidies and stuff. And there's an old gag about that goes, why can't you take a group picture of West Virginians? And the answer is every time the photographer says cheese, they form a single line.
Right, yeah, okay, I get that.
To a certain extent, progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call us, we have that problem too because it happens especially on the low level because we say, no, this issue comes first. And the other group says, no, my issue comes first. And no, third group, my issue is the most important.
I have a debate about that. Michael Parenti, in one of his in his speeches, was talking about where he was at a Labour a union meeting. And somebody stood up and said, oh, we've got to put a woman stood up and said, oh, we've got to put something in there about women's rights because we haven't got anything on that. And then a gay man stood up and said, oh, we've got to put something in there about gay rights because we haven't got anything about that. And transgender person stood up and said, we've got to put something about transgender rights. We haven't got anything about that. And just in front of Michael Parenti was this old, like, diehard, you know, bruised-knuckled union guy. And he said, yeah, how about putting something in there for the people who are too tired to have any sex in the chair? But this is the point. I mean, the issue is whatever you're addressing. You know, don't think about other issues unless you're in a meeting about them. I mean, you know, get on the school board. Get your friend on the county board. Get whoever, you know, find, and don't do it yourself. Go out there if you don't want to actually be exposed, you know, for whatever reason, and if people have personal reasons, history, all sorts of things. But find someone you respect, a lecturer, a teacher, now even a police officer, if there's any good ones left in the state, and just talk them into it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much just nagging people can get them to do stuff. It does work.
And that all begins conversationally, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that democracy starts with two people talking is absolutely right. And this is the problem, because, you know, a lot of the time we think, especially on the web, oh, everyone's connected to the web. But Bob, by far the majority of Americans don't have the web.
By far the majority of the human population of planet Earth does not have the phone.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, let's just talk about America and the web, because, you know, we're constantly going, oh, the information's out there, it's on the web. Well, I'm sorry, but if you live in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, and you haven't got a library near you with web access, and you don't have web access, then that information's not there.
Broadband ends here. No kidding. Where I'm sitting right now, the next house can't get broadband.
Well, yeah, I mean, in Britain, it's like 99% of the population can have broadband if they can pay for it, and you can have cheaper dial-up. But in America, I mean, you've got to live in one of the big cities, and that's it.
You just can't have broadband. I mean, yeah. It doesn't matter how much money you've got.
Well, so this is the problem. You know, the people who are listening to this show have got to stop thinking that everybody out there has access to the web. You need to start doing things. You know, talk to people in shops. Just talk to people on the street. You know, get a small sign and put on it, I'm fed up with our government, is anybody else? And ask them to write down on a clipboard or a pad of paper you're holding what it is they hate and actually find out what it is people hate. Don't tell them that you're a Republican. Don't tell them you're a Democrat. Just get them to write down what it is they dislike about the government. You know?
Yeah, and see and then see if there's any common ground. Andy, this is beautiful stuff. I wish you'd yelled in a little bit earlier, but I'm running out of show, and I got a couple of blinking lights I want to try to hit yet.
That's cool. Well, you were debating between Preston and Dave, so I thought I'd better leave it.
All right.
I'll call in again earlier at some point.
I hope you will. I hope it's been too long.
Yeah, man.
And hey to Hazel.
Yeah, like I said. Oh, we'll be, man.
All right. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, and hey, welcome to the program. Sorry the time's so short.
Hey, brother. Yeah, I'm going to be real quick. I just want to say, in order to get down to the bottom of what would be going on at one of these conventions, Puma, whatever they are, just find out how many male prostitutes are there, and then you'll know who's backing them. The other thing that I kind of want to say is I noticed how the crisis was in Georgia. That's really all I've been paying attention to for the past week. So I've noticed that, and I noticed how tough guy the Georgian president, did you hear his humiliating resignment to the peace treaty?
No.
If not. Yeah, it should take about 10 seconds to listen to him whine about how there's no further war and all this other junk. Anyway, that's a sigh relief. Hopefully we won't, you know, be bathing in nuclear fireballs this weekend. So that's hopeful, isn't it?
That would be a bonus. Yeah, because you know I've got my nuclear fireball scheduled for October. Actually,
yeah.
I took 2 weeks, first week of December, something like that. I think, yeah. But
yeah, you did. Yeah. I think it's just because information is just traveling too fast. That's what they can't get their feet out from under them in order to pull the crap that they want to be able to pull. You know, they're too primitive and old to adjust as fast as they need to in order to really, you know, they don't really know what kind of beast they're. What kind of beast humanity is actually becoming. It's one of those things that makes me happy to get up in the morning. But other than that, Bob, I just wanted to say great show as always. Have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you next
time. All right. Thanks, Albert. We will talk to you soon.
Bye, right, now. Buddy. Bye.
And I feel like I've run a race. That's it. Thanks for a great end of the week. And we'll catch you on Monday. Don't forget the weekend schedule, Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, the Rick Smith Show from Pennsylvania, as well as Billy Shears, the inimitable Billy Shears and Night Sounds. That all happens starting at about the 5 o'clock hour on Eastern Time on Saturday, and then rotates through the weekends. The first airing of Night Sounds will happen about 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday. Join us in the chat room. It's a heck of a lot of fun. We'll look for you there. Thanks to everybody who called, who emailed, who participated in what was a damn fine conversation tonight. And thank you to those of you who choose to stand shoulder to shoulder with us and make sure that these conversations keep happening via your contributions to the horn at headonradionetwork.com, the PayPal button, or by snail mail to 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and most especially, CoalRiverWind.org. They're rolling out a national campaign to build support for the Coal River Mountain Wind Project. Go to CoalRiverWind.org, sign the petition. If you've already signed it, tell somebody else. Get them to sign it. Be part of this move into the future. And be part of saving not just one mountain in West Virginia, but of saving yourself, your nation, your continent, and your world. Because lest we forget, we are all downstream, and we are all downwind. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.